When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Debate Night.
Yes.
I'm Hunter, joined by Brody to my left.
Silas, too.
Silas to my front. We don't have a camera on Silas, but next week.
Next week, Silas will have a camera.
Is that a guarantee or a hopeful?
No, that's a guarantee. That's a Brody guarantee.
That's a Brody Smith sealed, signed, sealed, delivered guarantee.
That is correct about 24% of the time.
Boom.
I feel. So that's
how you know it's a guarantee.
The odds are decent. So we're deep into the off season at this point.
I wouldn't say deep. We're 2 weeks.
No, it feels like it.
We're ankle deep into the off season.
It feels like it. But we have like certain things that are kind of tinkering, slowly having some people just kind of sprinkle out a little refreshments for us throughout this to get us through the season, which is nice. But, you know, we have some other topics outside of disc golf that I want to get into also. First, did everyone have a good Halloween?
I had a great Halloween. It's my wife's birthday, so that always makes things fun.
Silas?
Means I get lots of cake.
Good Halloween?
Mine was good. Connor had a party, and I forgot about it. So
he was invited, but then just didn't show up.
Oh. I'm also going to take this offer now, but these will be coming soon.
It's too hot in here?
Yeah, that was just a promotion. That was just to show that the Dark Horse beanies are coming back. But it's too hot in here for that. I'm not much of a beanie guy when it comes to the inside. I never was like the trendy beanie guy.
No. Silas is the trendy beanie guy, but you can't see.
Silas, I'm rocking it.
Silas can pull it off.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
You were talking about how you don't do, like you didn't give out candy. Like your neighborhood.
My neighborhood's not a candy neighborhood, no.
I didn't know.
We're not anti-candy. By any
you guys turned your lights out. That's pretty anti.
Well, okay. It's been a progression of several years. So we moved in 3 years ago, 2018.
That's aggressive.
When we moved in, we had our lights on. Lizzie, for her birthday, we were like, let's stay home, hand out candy. 5, 6, maybe 10 kids. Mm. 3 or 4 other houses on our street had lights on. The next year, we went over to her parents' house for her birthday. And when we came back, it was like prime time giving out candy. Mm-hmm. And our street is like up on like a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
So it's not like the main street on there. We went down and there's maybe 5, 6 families kind of walking, 2 lights on the street on.
Yeah. That's
last year.
That's pathetic.
I don't really know what happened.
That's sad.
This year.
Are you guys a Christmas neighborhood?
Oh, hardcore Christmas neighborhood.
Oh, when you don't have to have like people come to your house and hand out candy.
No, I think it's just that every single one of our neighbors, except for with the exception of one, is all they're all retired.
But
so
why,
like none of them have young
have
kids. None of them
on.
Have young kids.
That you don't have to have young kids to have give
well,
out.
Well, we're not the type of neighborhood you drive to.
Well, not anymore.
We never were.
I would never be that neighborhood.
We never were. There's like 4 or 5 big neighborhoods. We're not one of them. So you have to have kids in your neighborhood if you want it to be big.
Okay. Well,
and we're a retirement neighborhood plus Liz and I. It's kind of great because we got people watching our house 24/7.
It's
got to
start somewhere though.
Yeah. Thank you.
Be the change.
Yeah. Thank you.
Be the change,
Hunter. Christmas though, our neighbor across the street goes hard in the paint. Hard in the paint.
I'm going to have to go check that out.
We go just lights around the roof line.
Christmas lights.
Basic reindeer. And then the street down, so like the next street over, exactly behind our neighbor across from us, even goes harder in the paint.
Mm.
And
like
so,
are you talking about like lights going hard? Or are you talking about like they have like an inflatable Santa? They've
no.
got like Rudolph.
The one across the street from us is more the like yeah. The one across the street from us is more yard hard in the paint.
Okay.
The one behind him is all of the above.
Okay. Like, I respect the lights way more than the people that just put stuff in the
yard. There's a, about 20 minutes away towards downtown, there's a like sync up with your radio station lights house.
I love those. Yeah. I love those. There was one of those in our old neighborhood for Halloween, and it was awesome. Like they told like a spooky story or story kind of, and they had the lights going.
That's my dream.
And then they had like stuff synced up in the windows where like shadows were coming.
When
like
I retire, I'm going to be programming a Christmas program every year for my house.
Will you also be giving out Halloween candy, please?
If there's kids, I will. But like, I'm not going to turn my light
Connor,
on. And
be
buy,
the chain.
No,
if I start giving out $20 bills for Halloween, do you not think Silas' kids would show up?
I would show up.
Yeah,
I
mean, that would news.
But I'm saying
if I buy
a bucket full of candy, yeah, and I'm like, heck yeah, this is the year, and then five kids show up, I'm gonna eat that candy.
Well, it depends. Okay, well, that's your problem. But
what else am I gonna do with the candy?
Bring it into work like I did.
And then who eats it?
Carson was going ham on the candy.
Yeah, we all were.
Well, you gotta control yourself.
This is Brody's theory, is if he brings the candy in enough, he'll slow us all down, and then he really has no competition in the 100 meters.
I'm really honestly not worried about that at all.
I wouldn't be for you.
Let's quickly talk, though, about the best, because this was my favorite part of Halloween, okay? This is like my memory as a kid. First off, if you don't know about rollerblades, I don't know what you were doing.
Who doesn't know about rollerblades?
No, like trick-or-treating.
Oh,
like that was like the secret code.
You can't rollerblade trick or treat around here.
Yeah,
way too hilly.
What are you talking about?
Way too hilly.
You would die.
What do you mean? What are you talking about? That you can't trick or treat on rollerblades, or that trick or treat on rollerblades?
I didn't know that was a thing.
Okay, yeah, because he grew up around here too.
Yeah, yeah. So in Florida, where it's flat as a board.
Yeah,
yeah.
Me and my brother would wear a rollerblade, so we would be like a basketball player. And that was the other trick too, is you wanted to be like your costume needed to be someone like athletic. In the sense that you could just like wear something and you can get around quick. Like you don't want to be a freaking Ninja Turtle and have a turtle shell on your back and have all sorts
of
problems.
A cape that could possibly roll over.
Don't want to have a cape. That's always capes are a bad idea. And you would basically just be able to hit each house so quick because you're just going on rollerblades. You're just freaking flying in.
That's
flying
so smart.
Out. And like you get just hit. We go pillowcases. Obviously, most people know the pro move, pillowcases, right?
Way bigger.
Yeah, way bigger. But our favorite part of the night, like, was coming back home and dumping out all the candy, and we would sort it, right? So I'd get all Tootsie Rolls, Reese's, Mars bars, whatever. I'd start sorting everything and putting everything in their spots, and then we basically just have an auction almost, right? And so it's like, hey, I don't like, I did not like Three Musketeers. I still don't like Three Musketeers. I think it's a pretty overrated candy bar. So I would trade my brother like five Three Musketeers for like one Butterfinger, right?
Oh, that's terrible.
For who?
You.
No.
Five for one.
I'm not gonna eat it.
Like a two or three.
But I'm not gonna eat it. So like, well, he needs five for him to actually do it. You know what I'm saying? Because Butterfinger is pretty good.
Supply and demand.
But like, the idea is like you get to basically trade out what you want, and it was just fast. It was so much fun just dumping everything out and seeing what you got. So speaking of that, what is everyone's go-to? Like, if you showed up, obviously everyone loves the grab one, please, you know, where it's just the bucket out there because, you know, you could just take a handful. But, and obviously everyone loves the king size bars, right? Where you show up and it's just like a full king size
bar.
There's
always that one house.
Yeah. Yep. But like, what is your, besides those two instances, what is everyone's like go-to candy where you show up and you're like, oh yes, this person's got this candy. What was it?
That's tough. So, I mean, Reese's were like, it got me excited every time, but
which one? There's so many.
The normal like Reese's cup.
The normal cup.
That got me excited every time, but I wasn't fist pumping because I saw them at every house.
Okay.
Mr. Good Bars. Ooh. I might have got it. You might have got an actual fist pump out of me. Ooh. When you brought in Mr. Good Bars, I took them all and stuffed them into my thing and took them into my office.
I saw it.
Yeah. I grabbed like probably 20 of them. I've been looking for Mr. Good Bars at Sheetz for like 2 months.
Really?
None.
Interesting.
That's my favorite candy
bar. Kelsey did get a really good assortment of candies.
That's my favorite candy bar.
That was good.
Size, what do you got?
Mine? Let's see. Mine's got to be Snickers.
Snickers?
Snickers for sure.
Okay.
Snickers is like a meal replacement bar.
Like this. To be fair, though,
the little mini
Snickers is like a perfect, because like people talked about that too, like Reese's, when they when you get the Reese's the little one where you have to like unwrap the foil. What is that?
It's a mini.
That's a Reese's cup.
Is it a mini? Do you call it a mini cup?
They're all cups.
Yeah, but okay, it's a mini. Like the ratio of chocolate to peanut butter in that is not nearly as good as the ratio in the actual cup.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, no, people have talked about it. People have talked about it.
Yeah, they're two different candies.
They're not, though.
They are.
And this is why I'm going to say Snickers is pretty superior in that, because if I bite into a Snickers bar, it tastes exactly like biting into a mini. Like the mini tastes exactly like the ratio is the same.
I mean, if you're looking at them, it's the same candy, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. But mine would have to be Laffy Taffy. It's a very rare.
Which one?
Wait, yeah, which one?
Which one? Banana.
Oh!
Yes.
It's very rare. Laffy Taffy is not a super common candy.
That's awful. Banana?
Yes, I love banana. Banana's good.
Thank you.
No, sorry. Strawberry or grape, I would have at least like respected you.
But Halloween is like, it's up there as one of my favorite holidays. Like, and now that I actually get to hand out candy and like see kids come and get super excited, like it was a lot of fun. Kelsey loved it. She was playing her like Halloween music and everything. It was great. Mostly on TikTok songs. This shouldn't be a debate. Disturbia by Rihanna is not a Halloween song.
Halloween song? No.
Disturbia.
I mean, I feel like it gets played a lot on Halloween, but it itself is not a Halloween song.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Like Halloween's like a respectful time to play it.
She said it was in a playlist.
I'm sure it's in a Halloween playlist. In most Halloween playlists.
I told her she needed to skip that immediately. Because if I'm a kid and I'm walking up to Rihanna, Disturbia, I'm not excited.
I'm trying to think of the lyrics to that song.
It's not good.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a good song, but it's not a Halloween song. It's not. Like, I want the Monster Mash, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a Halloween song.
Graveyard Smash.
That's a Halloween song.
All right, we can dive in a little bit to this upcoming season schedule. I just really, you know, I don't want to talk too much on this. We can probably go into more of this once we get closer to the season. The one thing I do want to talk about is the interesting thing that I didn't even know when I first looked at it. You brought it up to me. I don't know how to say this. There are tournaments that were sent out as with all the 2022 tournaments mm-hmm. that are on the 2023 schedule. Is that the best way of saying that?
Essentially, there's just two Silver Series that are happening after the tour finale. So the points for that will go towards the 2023 season.
So it'd be equivalent to like in the NFL basically saying, hey, the Super Bowl is this date, and then there's going to be these two other tournaments after the Super Bowl that are going to count Mm-mm. for the next season?
Mm-mm. Because they're Silver Series. So it's not a top tier thing.
But why announce it with the 2022 schedule?
Because it's happening in 2022. So if you wait till the 2023 schedule comes out, events are going to be happening the next week.
Do you think it's weird that events in 2022... are going to be counting for 2023. Do you see what I'm saying?
I see where it could be weird.
Where you're basically announcing them with like two schedules at the same time.
Let me ask you this.
Is that that big of a deal? But I was just confused by it.
Does golf or tennis even, do they have like actual seasons?
I mean,
like after the FedEx Cup.
There is an off season.
After the FedEx Cup, is there going to be an event with PGA, FedEx Cup points that happen in the same calendar year?
The PGA Tour would announce the 2022 season, and it would only be tournaments that would count for the 2022 season.
So what would they do with an event that happened? Let's say golf.
They would
schedule.
Announce it as during the 2023 season.
But I'm saying, so in disc golf, we announced the 2022 season, what, last week? So end of October?
Well, isn't basketball a good example? Basketball crosses over from 2022 to 2023.
No, yeah, that's the 2020. So right now we're in the 2021-2022 season.
Yeah.
Because the season goes from October to June.
Yeah. So it crosses over.
Yeah, but that's all one season.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying the issue is we just announced the 2022 season, right?
Yeah.
Last week.
Mm-hmm.
These events would have already happened or be happening right now, basically next year. So if you wait till the 2023 season's announced, the events are already here. So when are you going to announce them? You need to announce them in time for a player like you to be able to plan. Hey, if I want to hit enough Silver Series, there's two extra ones. Why not?
I mean, when you need to announce it in time to plan. What day are the Silver Series after the tour finale? Dates are they?
One's the end of October, one's the beginning of November.
So I need a year to plan those?
No, but why would they just announce two random Silver Series in the middle of the month?
Why wouldn't they go
the middle of the season?
Why wouldn't they do 6 months from now? Well, I mean, again, this might be all this planning thing, but my idea would be like 6 months from now or 7 months from now, you would announce the 2023 schedule.
I didn't find it weird at all because I just saw it as
I might be weird.
I just saw it as like these are all of our 2022 events.
Okay.
These two are going to happen after the tour finale. So the points from these two events, even though they're happening in 2022, will go towards 2023's tour finale.
All right. I might.
That's how I viewed it.
Maybe other people don't view it weird either, but.
Well, to me, it's just like the.
I was. When you told me that those events were counting, because when I looked at it, I didn't think that. And then when you told me those two events account, I was like, well, I didn't even see that. What the heck? So.
Well, because it's basically what they're saying is like, if you do it where October's like the cutoff, then what? Can you never have events in November or December?
No, you can. But what I'm saying is you should have. You should be able to come out in like. I don't know, May, June, something like that, with next year's schedule.
Maybe they'll be able to now.
Yeah.
The issue is that PDGA...
Things are changing and all that stuff.
Well, the issue is the PDGA doesn't approve A-tier sanctioning. And they open it October 18th.
That goes to a different debate of why does the Disc Golf Pro Tour need to have A-tier sanctioned or B-tier or whatever.
Sure,
so
that's different. But I'm just saying right now, the issue is October 18th is the initial... Yeah. As soon as you can apply for an A-tier... So then a few weeks go by before the Pro Tour can even see what is an A tier, but to see even see what's going to be on a Silver Series event for next year. Mm-hmm. So like there's no way you can in May know these events are going to be
Silver. I'm talking in fairy tale. So you know, roast me all you want.
I understand where you're coming from. I don't
It can't happen right now.
Exactly. That's my point. Is I think that they did it the best way that they can possible. For right now.
Okay. All right, you tweeted out something that said, what are your thoughts on how much players' packs should be valued for AMs? And I know you're probably going to dive into this more on Grip Locked, but I just want to quickly say I don't know. I talked to Kelsey a little bit about this too, because we do a lot of races. We've done like half marathons, 5Ks, all that stuff. And we're not, when we pay $50, I think our half marathon was $100. We're not assuming or thinking that when we show up, we're going to be getting all this swag and all this stuff, right?
Well, you can see where I'm headed with it with my follow-up tweet that
I didn't
sent.
See the follow-up.
I just recently sent. I quote tweeted it. Let me get to my profile so I can read it. I quote tweeted it and I said, all right, follow-up for the people who voted equal or greater answers. How much do you value the experience of the event when registering, and should that be factored in at all?
So 70, if I do my calculations right, 76.6% said that the player's pack for AM should be equal to the entry fee or greater than the entry fee. Basically meaning 25% people thought that if I pay $100, I need to be getting back more than $100 worth of stuff.
The reason this tweet was initially sent out, and what we'll talk about more on Griplock, was the NADGT that just happened.
That is wild to me, Stylus. That would be great. That'd be great for anything.
Yeah. Well, that's what. So the NADGT just recently happened. We'll talk about the details of that, but basically that's what started this whole conversation.
Yeah.
I wanted to see where do people think, because I think that's going to be a great talking point in general. But I have told many local players. There's been several local players who want to go pro, but they're really good in MA1, and they're like on the fence of like, should I go pro now or should I not? And I'd be like, what are your goals in disc golf?
Yeah.
And some of them are like, well, if I went pro, I just think it'd be nice. I could make a little bit of money. And I'm like, if you're just in it for money, flip your players pack and flip your payout as an AM. You're going to make more money than a local pro every time. Because every event, basically, you get your money back in the players pack. So if I put $60 in, I'm getting a $60 player pack, flip that. Even if you get $50 for it, flip it, $50. Then I get my payout of $90. Flip all those discs for $80. I just got 120 some bucks at a local C tier, unless you're winning open.
Yeah, you're not making
it's going to be
much.
Tough for you to, because you're going to be putting in probably $70.
Jeez.
So now you have to be getting $190.
Dark Horse strats from, are you going to take into account that, Silas? Yeah. We're going to start seeing some amateur.
I'm just saying, that's what right now AM events, I think, are very, very heavily weighted, if that makes sense. We're going to talk about it a lot more on Grip Lock because I got more stats and stuff.
It's just wild to me, though, because I wonder, because like when I was talking to Kelsey about the marathon we did, we spent $100. We got probably like a $10 t-shirt.
And you got a medal.
We got like a $5 medal, if that. but they did feed us afterwards. Mm-hmm. There was live music. There was all this other stuff.
There's an event experience that you paid for.
Yeah, so like I'm not leaving with over $100 worth of stuff, but first off, like even if none of that stuff existed, you know, maybe my entry fee drops to like $60, and now like what I'm really paying for is like the you know, the police or whatever they need to do to have like security out to shut down the roads. I'm sure that costs some sort of money, right? And then like all like the functional stuff of like getting a time, having photos while you're running, like all the functional stuff of like
and starting
the
people who
and
put
finishing,
the event on have to actually make
money. Some money, sure, all that stuff. So like if I'm leaving and I don't even get anything to like take home with me, I'm still thinking like, hey, this was worth it, right? Like I'm not entering in a 5K race because I'm paying $35 and I'm getting $50 in return for my player pack. Like that's not why I'm entering it. So that, I don't know if that's a disc golf thing or maybe that's an amateur thing across multiple sports.
I think it's a disc golf, right? Mm. And so then it's like, hey, you pay $60. Look, you're already going to get your $60 back. And then you just have a free event.
Yeah.
And then we
wild.
Have on top of it, here's payout too, to where there were several events in the early days, especially early days for me running a TD. If I made $2 a player on the AM side, I was stoked. Like if we, when Foundation didn't exist, we weren't handling payout. Like you had to pay other people to handle your payout on top of it, right? To where there were some events where early I wanted to make sure I got as many players out as I could. It was struggle to fill a tournament as a C tier. I would lose money. I would spend $300 investing in the tournament to hopefully build it out and be okay. Like, hey, I lost $300 this weekend, and I worked all day Saturday.
I mean, I think,
but that was like to build the tournament out. But now what's happened is that doesn't need to happen anymore, right? But players are used to it now. So you're used to like, hey, this tournament, I'm going to pay $200. I need to get a $300 players pack, and I need my payout to be on top of it to where like each player is worth like $400. And so you're like 200%
yeah.
value. And it's like, where do you expect the tournament director to make money? And if the tournament director makes money, a lot of times it's looked at as like, that guy's a criminal. How dare he make money? And you're like, well, then how do you want people to keep running tournaments if they can't make money running tournaments? Because then you're just going to have crappy events ran by people who kind of don't want to be there versus like if it's a monetary like thing where people are motivated, like, hey, if I run 25 tournaments this year, I can make a living running 30 tournaments or whatever
then,
it may be.
And then you actually have a full-time job running tournaments. And
and guess what? Those events are going to be really quality.
Yeah, it's going to get back. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it depends. I think it just comes down to like why, like what drives you to play tournaments, right? Mm-hmm. If the answer that is what drives you to play tournaments is I want to walk away with value of discs and swag and whatever like that.
Just go buy it online. Then just go spend $200 on swag and go play around at your favorite course and like call it your tournament.
If that's what you, I mean, to me, like I just feel like if I showed up to an event and they had good bathrooms, they had like everything was in line as far as like the schedule and everything like that. Parking was taken care of. Scores were being updated well. The communication of like when tee times are going is happening. Maybe there's some snacks like on hole 6 and hole 12. There's snacks and good water.
Yeah.
Like I'm walking away being like, all right, that was a really good tournament. I had a lot of fun going out and playing. But I mean, I guess, you know, there might be some people that are in it for the other stuff. I think this is where I'll end it on. I think some tournaments for sure can be known as that. Like, oh man, this tournament gives out insane swag bags, right?
Well, I think, yeah.
But I don't think you need to have, like, I don't think tournament directors should feel the pressure across the board that if they have a $60 entry fee and they're 60 and they've taken into account, like, okay, I'm going to make $2 off of each person and then this is going to go blah, 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 blah. And they can run a really good tournament, but there's no swag bag or whatever. Like, I just don't think they should feel pressured that they need to give people stuff before they even like.
Well, I think that was part of the issue. You know, why this whole thing started was the NADGT. We'll talk about exactly. I don't remember because it's on my grip lock notes exactly the details. But basically, instead of saying like you're paying $200, we're going to give you two discs. This isn't the actual player's pack, but let's just say it was like two discs, a bag, and a hat. And you agreed, like, I'm gonna pay $200, and that's what I'm getting. Mm-hmm. It was like, you pay $200, your player's pack's gonna be worth $350+.
Yeah.
But there wasn't exact items listed. So then when they got it, people were like, what the frick? This isn't... And so that was the issue that started it.
Yeah.
So that's a whole separate issue.
Yeah, I'm not even talking... But, I'm not even talking about that. Like, no, obviously, if you're doing that, if you're saying, hey, this is... I mean, there's influencers that have gotten... That have done this scam to their their people all the time. It's like, hey, I'm going to send out mystery boxes for $100. Yeah. It's going to be valued $500. And then the people get them and they're like, this is all crap. What the heck? This isn't even worth $20.
Yeah.
Like there's scam. Like those are scams.
Well, that's what I was saying.
I'm talking about the premise of
that
the idea.
Situation started the whole conversation of player tax in general.
It should be a good conversation.
Which I think is a good conversation. Yeah.
I think people need to talk about it because I mean,
and I will definitely be able to talk about it a lot more because we can bounce off. We've both ran tournaments. Yeah. And so we know.
Because it's hurting.
It's just different from a tournament director's point of view than a player's point of view.
But it's hurting it. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, it's hurting the tournament.
The prize packs is hurting the amount of tournaments that can go out, and it's also hurting the fact of where the money's going.
Correct. And I think part of it's just transparency, too. Yeah. People need to know where their money's going when they put it in. Because if you knew, like I played a tournament at Ballantyne in Charlotte. It's like $125 for me to play. But a huge chunk of it, I forget what it was, but a huge chunk per player went to renting out the Ballantyne Golf Club.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew that going in. So like our players pack for $125, our player pack sucked and it was trophy only. So if I looked at it just completely objectively as an AM, I could be like, that was an awful event.
Yeah.
But since I knew X amount went to renting out the golf club so we could play there, then I walked away feeling like that was a great event.
That was
because
cool.
I knew this was a sick experience. I got to play on this luxurious golf course, we had food provided, all of that built in because I knew ahead of time.
I think people have gotten bit, you know, like
absolutely.
They've gone to a tournament that was $60 and it felt like it should have been $5.
Yeah.
Right. And that, I think everyone has experienced that before of like, why the heck is this expensive?
Yeah.
And I'll be frank with you. Like, my tournament fees are reimbursed, right? Like I get that covered. So I'm probably a little bit more, what's the word when you can't feel it? What's that word? What's
numb?
A little more numb to it because at the end, I'll be honest. Like at the end of the day, if something's $100 or $250, like I'm going there regardless, and I'm going there because I'm trying to get
right. But you're not getting a player pack.
I'm not getting a player pack. Yeah. But I can. I've definitely gone to some tournaments where I'm like, holy cow! Like this tournament is not run well. And if it was my money and I wasn't there just because I'm there just for the competition, right? Like, all the other stuff is bonus. If there's water, if there's bathrooms, like all that to me is like bonus stuff. But I can see how, like, if you were promised a player's pack or you paid $80 and you showed up and like you're like, what the heck? Where's my money? It's going away. What you're saying? Where's my money going?
Exactly.
Now you're like, oh, the tournament director just basically pocketed all my money. I can see how you're upset with that. But I don't think, like in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that should be like what you should be thinking about every tournament. It's tough, obviously. It's, if you get screwed once, like it's like tough to like just trust everyone. But I do think if tournament directors are really worried about that, I mean, it could be a problem for whatever. All right, let's jump into the last thing I want. Oh no, let's real quickly. These just came out actually, so you guys can react with, if you guys haven't seen these, you guys can react to us live in the chat right now as well. The chat's actually going off tonight, which is pretty.
But someone started a debate that they're swearing up and down.
Oh boy! Well, we got a lot of mods, so we should be good.
No, it's not a modded debate. They're swearing.
No, I'm saying we have a lot of moderators.
But I'm saying it's not a debate that really needs to be modded. It's just they swear up and down that disc golf's harder than golf.
Oh, I thought you were saying swearing.
Oh no, I'm saying like, they swear
I was
up
like,
and down.
I was like, they're like dropping F-bombs.
Like they refuse to listen to people that they're saying golf's harder.
I would love to have him call in and
that's
see
what people
say. Also, someone did donate. Help me out there. D Lilo donated $10 to the podcast. Thank you for that. They asked, how many pros do you think MPO or FPO are making more than Kristen Tatar?
So
FPO, I would probably only put Paige and maybe Kat, but I don't think Kat is making.
Well,
re-signs after her world championship, maybe.
Well, are we talking just off contracts or are we talking...
I think overall.
Overall.
Yeah.
So that's tough because like Missy, for instance, on tournament earnings alone this year made $67,000. 500 grand. 500 grand over 4 years is 125 a year.
She might,
but
be,
Kristen's not really able to play much.
Yeah,
right
but
now.
Kristen, how much did Kristen make this year in winnings? She probably made 20, 30, 40.
I would say, like, if Kristen's playing every Pro Tour event and everyone else is playing every Pro Tour event, I would say FPO, Paige, and maybe Kat.
And maybe Kat.
And then on MPO, I would say the top.
I'd say there's a handful.
Five to eight.
5 to 8, yeah.
Yeah, it would put her in the top. In my, it would put her comfortably in my top 20.
Oh, easily. Overall. Top 20 highest paid, for sure.
Comfortably in my top 20.
For sure. So let's just chat real quick because these just came out. The college football rankings just came out. So for those that don't know.
Oh, these are different than what
these
ESPN.
Are not the college football rankings. These are the college football rankings. So this is such a weird, this is another like weird thing that college football and really everyone does, but I love it, right? Like they come out with the early, they come out with like preseason rankings, right? And then from there, those rankings ultimately, they do matter a little bit because they do kind of go into this formula, but it's a weird thing because you have some teams, like I believe Iowa at one point was like 2 in the nation or something. And you can tell they're not good. Notre Dame is a great school that does this every year where they're like always in the top 10 no matter what. And some years that they end up like not even the top 25, right? So the rankings that actually matter, college football playoff rankings, top 4 go into the playoff, just came out. And this is not going to tell me what those are. How is it so hard to
find
this?
You
mean
to find it on ESPN?
How is it so hard to find this?
I can find it on ESPN's Twitter.
Predictions? This just came out. But really, I mean, honestly, all I really want to talk about is Alabama at number 2. How the heck do you put Alabama at number 2? That's really what I want to know. Also, Michigan State jumping up that much. Like, I don't see how that happened either. Michigan State, I believe, is 3.
Yeah, so right now it's
and they beat a Michigan team that hasn't beaten anyone yet.
ESPN tweeted Georgia number 1.
That's fine. They're
Alabama
clear in front.
Number 2.
I don't get that.
And then Michigan State number 3.
I think that's
this is after week
10. High.
And then
that's right now. That's,
yeah. But I'm saying, how many more weeks are there?
There's a couple more weeks. There's like 15 or 16 weeks.
Did you see Wake Forest?
Wake Forest? 9. Yeah, Wake Forest is dark horse sneaky. Dark horse.
Well, then Oregon's number 4.
You know what's wild, though, is Wake Forest could go undefeated, win the ACC, and not make it in.
Well, that's
There's
what
a very
I hate.
Good yeah. chance. There's a very good chance
stand,
that actually happens.
I can't stand college football simply because, like, if you're not in the SEC, like, if you're not in the SEC, you can't lose. I know that's not true. I know it's not fully true.
Florida definitely lost last week.
Yes.
Florida definitely showed that you can lose last week.
But I'm saying if you're not in the SEC
or Big Ten
and you get a loss on your schedule
or Big Ten,
sure.
Yep.
But ACC is a great example. If Wake Forest
Clemson's trash this year. Yes. That's the problem. You got for this to work, you have to have a couple teams, even if they're not good, they have to look good. And right now in the ACC, like Clemson, everyone thought Clemson was going to be good this year. They're trash. Yeah. So like if you're a Wake Forest, who do you have to like
that's what
basically
I'm saying,
say that
is,
you beat?
But what? But you don't know how good of a team they are because who have they lost to?
No,
no one.
This is why.
No one.
This is why I would love the playoff
system.
That's
why it should be massive. What? I can't be massive. I get it. Can't be 60 whatever games.
I would love 8. I
think
8
would be great.
But going to
8 would
be
much better.
I mean, 6
didn't they talk about going to 8?
Well, 6 I think is going to happen in a couple years. It has to because people are just start going nuts.
They've just got
to
make it bigger. I just hate – it makes it hard for me to care about college football because if a team you're like somewhat rooting for and they can be filthy and they just sneak one loss, it's like – kind of a bonehead loss.
They have to lose at the beginning of the season. See, Ohio State's in a really good spot because they lost first game, right, to a highly ranked Oregon team. Oregon's still highly ranked right now. So Ohio State, if they run the table, they're in.
Yeah.
But some of these other teams, if they lose that are undefeated, if they like Oklahoma, for example, Oklahoma's undefeated, but if they lose to like Oklahoma State late in the season, they're out.
I just that's
even though
I
they
like.
Both lost one game.
I think it's because I'm so used to college basketball where it's like every team has a shot because like if you win your conference championship, you're in, and then like you could have a filthy you could have Davidson with Steph Curry that like
Madness. There's no
picture this. Davidson with Steph Curry
there's no comparison.
Is a football team. They're never getting into the playoff. That's never a storyline.
It's UCF. That was UCF who claimed that they were national champions that one year because they went undefeated, but they didn't make it into the playoffs. So they said, we're national champions.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I respect them. I kind of want a UCF national championship hat.
Ohio State's going to beat Michigan State, beat Michigan, and then beat Wisconsin and be the number two seed going into the college football playoffs. You heard it here first. All right. Last thing real quick before we jump into a fun game that Hunter has made for me, and maybe Silas, you can join in too. I don't know. Did you?
I intentionally created this game to spark debates.
Okay, perfect.
Oh,
but
boy.
Before we go into that,
I didn't talk to Silas about it. He wasn't at work today.
One of the biggest debates that went on, Silas, because I want to kind of get your opinion on this. Okay. I feel like you would have an interesting opinion. This went on for maybe 30 minutes It was re-brought up for another 20. I have information from Kelsey.
Okay. I'm not talking during this segment. I know what he's about to bring up. I'm not talking. Right. I will get too heated.
I'll just quickly talk about it a little bit. And maybe we'll bring this up. Oh, this is good promo for the banter. So this week, when is that going up? The banter? Thursday? Friday?
It's going to go up Thursday.
Thursday. The Bogey Bros banter, which used to be a Patreon-only podcast, is now
going public.
It's going public. We're going
NASDAQ.
What is that? POE?
The Stock Exchange.
Is that what
it is? We're an IPO.
IPO. When was POE? Well, I don't even know.
POE?
We're not actually going public.
I don't know what
it's going public as in like you can watch.
But yeah, so everyone will be able to watch. Everyone will be able to watch the Bogey Bros banter. And then we also have a new podcast coming out called Lunch Break.
That's Patreon only.
That's Patreon.
That's taking place of the Bogey Bros banter to Patreon, but it's going to be a live stream, more interactive, more people. I think the Patreon members will enjoy it more. And the Bogey Bros banter, I think, our podcast audience will enjoy.
Yeah. So this would be a topic that you would see on Lunch Break, which is the new podcast for Patreon only. And this is one of the reasons why we're having Lunch Break, because I was like, dude, we talk about some really good topics on here and we need to have other people chime in. So Silas, this was the topic. Okay.
All right. I'm ready.
Can I pose him the question?
No.
I feel like you're going to pose him the question in a way that makes me lose.
You can pose the question, but I'm going to talk about how we even got there first off. Okay. So
you're gonna talk about it first? Can I pose the question first?
No. Because you
let me just pose the question first.
Don't pose it because
I just want to hear Silas's raw answer.
Gosh. Okay, go.
All right, Silas, you have unlimited money. Okay. More money than's in the world right now. Unlimited. Okay. Trillions and trillions, however much money you want.
Okay.
Is there a tangible object on earth that you can't buy? Not a person or like a body part or anything like that, but like a tangible object. Property. House.
I mean, you don't have to give
examples.
Jeez.
Is there an object on earth with unlimited money you can't buy?
Basically, can you buy everything? If you have enough money, you buy everything?
That's just the question.
See, I think it would have been better.
There's no wrong answer.
I think it would have been better if I
would have
built
it. I want to hear his answer. There's no wrong answer.
If you have enough money,
you can buy anything.
Okay.
Okay, perfect.
That's it.
All right, so
are we talking materialistic things?
Yes.
Well, hold on. I'll pose the question. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So this is how it starts.
Okay, how does it start?
I said, you know, it would be an awesome job to have is to be like one of those admission people at a college, like a really nice university.
How would that be a great job?
Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. First off,
just sitting there in
because
your
I'm changing kids' lives. I'm changing kids' lives, right? I'm
but being you're going to have a I'm thousand being, of them on your desk.
No, I only have to read three. Like, those people are cranking out applications every day. I have a cushy job where I just come in and I just get to pull, like, three. Okay?
Okay.
And I'm just looking at this and I'm like, oh, Justin Thomas. He's from Wintergreen, Florida. Very interesting. I get to read his whole whatever, right? So Trevor was like, yeah, but you're going to have to deal with all those, like, bribers, right? You're going to get bribes. And I'm like, oh, that's fine. Like, I'm not worried about that. And he's like, yeah, but what if, like, someone, like, offered you $10,000 for Johnny to get in? And I'm like, I'm not taking that. I'm like, I'm not accepting money as a bribe. Like, I want something that I can't buy. What the heck? Like, I don't want you in. So I kept asking, basically saying, like, give me something.
That's where it came from.
Yeah, because I was like, give me something that I can't buy, right? I was like, and Hunter basically was like, there isn't anything. And I was like, oh, really? And I said, how about a tea time at Augusta? Which, if you don't know, Augusta is where they hold the Masters.
Right.
Super I said, you couldn't find a club member to pay $1 trillion.
Super exclusive.
I need a tea time.
Okay. Then we kept talking a little bit. And then I said another thing that you would never be able to buy. And I got confirmation from Kelsey you would never be able to buy our corgis.
But
no
again,
amount of money. No amount of money would she ever sell the corgis. Then I brought that up. And then Hunter was like, I posed it to Hunter. I was like, Hunter, would you sell your dogs? And he said, absolutely.
Well, I didn't say absolutely. I said for millions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, absolutely.
My number was
for million.
In the million. Okay. You're not writing me an $800 check for my dog, okay?
But then Trevor upped it and said, okay, but the person that's writing you the check is literally tells you, like, hey, I have this gun. As soon as I buy your dog, I'm going to shoot it in its head. Would you still sell it to him?
Oh.
Him and Liz both said they would for 10 to 15 mil. Okay.
I would do it for 10 to 15 mil.
My point is, and this is my point, some people are going to view certain things.
Yes.
There's a reason why the word priceless exists.
Correct.
Some people, I guarantee they have some sort of something in their collection, right? They have a collectible, something like that, or some family heirloom or something.
Well, here's what I'm saying.
Where they will not, no matter how much money, and this is the other reason. How many times have you driven down like a really, really like built out, like a Chicago, a New York, like a built out city?
Yes.
And then there's like between these huge skyscrapers, there's a rinkety dinky little house. It's because that person, literally no matter what, people come to them millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars saying, we want your land. We want your land. They're like, no, this is my house. This is where I live. I'm living here. I think some people, there's certain things that they will never sell, and that is why the word priceless exists. I rest my case.
I will say the house is a very small percentile that I would agree with you. Like you could offer that person $10 trillion. It's just that person has made
money
it their life
goal.
Money
means nothing to them at that
but
point.
But what I will say is it's a lot. Like if we're about to shoot a basketball shot, right, and you're at half court, I'm like, dude, $1 million if you hit this. And it's just me and you right now in our current life state. And I say $1 million if you hit this, no pressure on you because you know Hunter's not giving me $1 million if I hit this, right? Versus I now have a check in my hand for $1 million and you know it's a legit check. And I'm like, if you hit this, you get $1 million. Now there's pressure.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is priceless. If I have a card that's priceless, right? If someone was like, dude, what if someone offered you $10 trillion? You're like, priceless, dude. No way. Because you know, like, no one's offering me $10 trillion.
He's got a point.
Versus someone walks in with a check that says $10 trillion and your name on it, and you're like, this is literally yours if you give me your card. I'm like
right now.
You know what? That Michael Jordan rookie card is, what does priceless mean? Here you go. All yours.
I think there's some people that just don't
That's all I'm saying.
Don't care about money, and they care about... Well,
the original initial point was he said there was no amount of money on the face of the earth that you could buy Augusta with, the golf club.
You couldn't. Yes. You couldn't. You couldn't buy it.
I was saying that there's enough money somewhere, somehow, that you could. Even if you bought like the whole state of Georgia, and you're like, hey, I'm buying every property in Georgia.
You can't
like,
buy the White House.
I'm just saying like that... There's ways around stuff.
All right, let's jump into this game. I don't think so.
I think Hunter has a great point.
But Brody's point is better.
Well, the whole thing is this is all fictional, so there's no way to actually know the answer until someone offers the owner of Augusta $10 trillion.
All right, you'd be the first.
Well, I mean, the richest man on Earth is worth like $300 billion. So we need Elon Musk to, A, all of that be liquid, which it's not, and B, be worth now 500,000 times that.
Get to Mars or something.
What? Okay, let me introduce you to a game. This is going to be the first game we've ever had on debate night. And I think it's a pretty great game.
I'll be the judge of that.
Silas, if you want to jump in on this, you can.
Okay.
So basically the premise is I have went into the PDGA rules, deep into the PGA rules.
Mm.
I have pulled four rules on my sheet right here, okay? Some are going to be real. Some are going to be fake. So some I just made up. Some are 100% real rules. Y'all's job, and we'll keep your score against each other, is just to tell me if this is a real PDGA rule or if this is a PDGA rule that I made up.
We'll do like a 1, 2, 3, and then you say real or fake.
All right.
Okay. First rule. If a thrown disc breaks into pieces, its position is that of the largest piece.
Mm.
All right. Y'all ready?
I'm ready. Is this true or false?
Just real, real or fake.
Real or fake.
Real or fake.
Real or fake. Okay.
3, 2, 1.
Real.
Fake.
Brody's right. 1 point, Brody.
Oh.
Hide the chat.
I
know you didn't look.
I didn't look.
That was also by far the easiest one, but hide the chat. Brody's up 1-0.
Well, don't be mean to Silas. Okay. Jeez.
No. Well, Silas has never like played in tournaments.
Yeah,
that's something that you'll like learn as you play for
I feel like someone, and this is why how I know most of the rules, to be honest with you, is I feel like most people have like told me stuff.
Yeah.
Someone has shattered a disc.
Yeah. If it's cold enough.
I have. KC Pro Rock.
Did you not listen to Griplock last week? He was like,
I almost cried.
He was like crying and telling his story about his disc.
Really
shattering.
Though, like Mick Pro Plastic, Casey Pro Plastic. Okay.
Next question.
Next rule. Okay, so Brody's up 1-0.
Want to see tears.
Brody's up 1-0. All right. Next rule. The player with the lowest overall score or lowest player number in case of a tie is responsible for keeping and turning in the score. If other players or staff volunteer to keep score, they may do so if the majority of the card is in agreement.
Oh, okay. I'm ready.
Are y'all ready?
Yeah.
Silas, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
False.
Oh, y'all both said fake.
Yeah.
Is that real?
That is fake. So the actual rule.
That's crazy.
The actual rule. The reason I rewrote this is I don't know if you know the actual rule to this, actually, though. So the actual rule in the PDGA is it has to be proportional among card members.
What does that mean?
So if no one volunteers to keep the score for the entire round, if everyone's just like, I don't really want to keep score,
they do six holes.
It actually goes 4 holes, 5 holes, 4 holes, 5 holes.
Oh, okay.
So all 4 keep it.
Yeah. But who has to turn it in?
The person who is at the top of the card is responsible actually to turn it in. That's like normally just like a tournament thing. Everyone's responsible to check their score.
Yeah.
And then the entire card is held responsible for turning it in. But etiquette wise, it's normally the first person. Okay. PDGA rule wise, the entire card's responsible. And that's why they're proportionally responsible for keeping that score.
Interesting.
So I thought I might get you because usually the player with the lowest overall score, which is the top of the card, is the person who starts. And a lot of times the person's just like, you know what, I'll keep it.
Couldn't get us, man.
But I didn't get you.
I thought I literally was going off the fact of like who had to turn in. So I technically was wrong, but I got it right.
You
so
got it right.
I'll take it.
All right. Third rule. A disc that is questioned by another player or an official is illegal until it is subsequently approved by a tournament director.
Oh, gosh. You've asked this before. You've talked about this before. Okay. Say it one more time. Say it one more time. Hold on. Silas D.
A disc that is questioned by another player or an official is illegal unless it is subsequently approved by the tournament director.
Meaning that if I question your disc, you cannot throw it until a tournament director comes and says that disc is PDGA approved.
I'm allowed to throw it, but I'm risking a two-stroke penalty.
You are?
In this case. Okay. A legal disc is a two-stroke penalty every time you throw it.
So what you're saying, though, is what I said is correct.
Essentially, yeah. As soon as you question said disc, it is now illegal.
I got it.
You ready? Silas?
Yeah.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Real.
Y'all are both right.
Let's go.
That is rule 813.01. That was a make that call segment.
I feel like I was a make that call because I remember it.
That's just to me, because, that is the most drastically craziest worded rule of all time.
Because you basically, right. I think you guys were joking, and this is why it stuck in my memory. I think you were like jokingly talking about like if Silas had like a zone that he was just crushing you.
Perfect
with.
Example. You just be like, Drew Gibson's orange buzz.
Yeah.
Sorry, orange mid-range.
Yeah.
Just what if like USDGC?
Hey, I think that the weight's too high.
USDGC,
that.
I'm like, Drew, I'm pretty sure that's an illegal disc.
Yes.
Until the tournament director, who is Jonathan Poole, who was just kind of floating around everywhere.
Until he shows up
and approves. It doesn't say an official. It says the director.
He can't throw that disc.
No, he can throw it.
No, but...
But he's risking. So if he throws it...
He's risking the
if he throws it...
So
now,
if he knows 100% that it's
like 100%
legit,
this is legal.
But I would be nervous to do that.
Exactly. It makes you nervous. Because if it turns out at the end of the round it's checked and it's illegal, every time you threw that disc is a two-stroke penalty.
Gosh.
And if you throw it enough, you can be disqualified from the tournament. There's no real line as to when that happens. It just says, like, if you continue to throw an illegal disc, you can be disqualified. So, like, every time you threw it now, you're like, but what if, like, I don't know the weight of this disc and, like, by chance it is too heavy?
I should, like, pull that.
Like in the back of your head?
No,
like,
I should
have that. You have that.
I should, like, do that if me and Paul do, like, a battle.
Be like, hey, man, I'm pretty sure that disc
is illegal.
Be
like, hey, you're Luna's. They look illegal. And then make him have to putt with, like, a buzz or
That's
something.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what if you called both of someone's putting putters illegal?
Yeah.
Then, like, every time they're on a putting green, you're like, I really hope that Discraft put the right weight stickers on this thing.
Who
knows if that's
I hope this didn't weigh in at 176 when I tap out because I just took 30 putts this round.
Yeah, because there are not, I'll tell you right now, there are no way players are, and maybe
players
they should.
Aren't checking
maybe
it.
They should, but players are not checking to make sure their discs are legit. They're assuming that the manufacturers that are sending them the disc.
That's what I'm saying. Imagine how terrifying that would be if someone
I would be
legitimately
terrified.
Called you on like your favorite disc. Yeah.
I would be terrified.
It would get the nerves going.
I wouldn't throw it.
Sure.
Yeah, and then like ruin your whole round. That's a very scumbag thing to do, but I've read the rules multiple times, and I'm like, that is possible.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go.
All right, Brody.
Now I know.
First off, you've already beat Trevor and Connor at this game with the same rules.
I mean, are you surprised?
But you have a shot to go 4-for-4 here.
Let's go.
Silas, if you get this right and Brody gets it wrong, then
we tie
and I'll have to come up with a tiebreaker. Okay, so final rule. A player must not engage in distracting or unsportsmanlike actions such as advancing beyond the away player.
Oh. Silas, I'm ready.
Can you read that again?
A player must not engage in distracting or unsportsmanlike actions such as advancing beyond the away player. The away player meaning the player who it's their turn to throw.
Oh, okay, okay.
Y'all ready?
I got it.
3, 2, 1.
Real. Fake.
It is real.
I hate this.
Goes to Brody.
You picked a lot of rules that I absolutely hate.
I said it was meant to spark debate.
Yeah, I hate this. What rule? What did what did Connor and Trevor get wrong?
So Connor got wrong. I got them both with my fake rule. They both thought that was real.
Okay.
That
was well written. I will say.
How many
that.
Did they get?
So they both got two.
Oh,
so you tied them. Yeah,
you tied. And then Trevor missed the last one, and Connor missed the second to last one.
Yeah.
The reason I brought up the last one is because you've talked about.
Yeah, I hate that rule. The fact that, because I'll be frank, I break that rule every time I play.
And it should be broken. Explain the rule.
So essentially, if I'm farthest away from the basket,
Let's do like a diagram. Let's do a
diagram it up.
Okay.
This is Hunter. Okay. Hunter's the phone. This is me. Okay. I'm back here.
This is great for the audio listeners.
Yeah. The audio listeners are loving this. Pull those keys in here. Okay,
basket.
Put the heels here. That's the basket, okay?
Basket.
Hunter's here getting ready to throw a shot 400 feet away.
Yes.
Okay? I'm supposed to stand here and just watch Hunter.
Right.
But my disc is way over here. So instead of me standing here and watching Hunter and then having to walk...
You just walk? I hate that noise.
Yeah,
sorry. I just go to my disc.
Advancing beyond where I'm at.
I'm in front. Before I'm in front of Hunter. Yeah, because Hunter right now, he's range finding. Yeah. He's like trying to figure out what disc he's doing. Guess what I'm doing? I'm also doing the same thing, right? Yeah. I'm getting stuff set up. Then Hunter, I see Hunter's getting ready to throw. I stop.
Hey,
I
want to throw.
I watch Hunter. Hunter throws. I watch it. Okay.
Ching! Ah!
and then I start getting ready to throw.
Yeah.
Right? Versus right now, you have everyone standing behind the person that throws, and then they go to the next person, and then everyone stands behind that person. So in the woods, it doesn't make that much sense. You can't really do it in the woods, but especially on some of these bigger courses, you definitely can. And, you know, I'm just all about trying to not be out there for 5 hours.
Yeah. So the whole reason this rule exists, because in golf, you can walk forward, correct?
Yeah.
But in golf, when you go to hit the shot, you're looking down at the ball.
It's a respectful thing.
Is that correct? In golf, you look down at the ball when you hit?
Yeah, sure.
In disc golf, you're looking up towards your target.
I just don't like this.
So the difficult part is, let's say that in some scenarios, I agree with you. Like,
what you're saying is, like, now you're saying, like, the difficult part is having fans in front of you.
Well, yes and no. Because, like, if there's a wall of fans, I'm not distracted. If there's one singular person in the woods... Like where Silas is at, and he's range finding and stuff. Now I'm distracted.
The woods does not count. We're not talking.
I'm in a wide open field.
You're in a wide open field.
There's a wall of people, and they're all moving. I'm not distracted.
No, but I'm 200 feet to your left and 50 feet in front of you.
So when I'm running up, directly where my head's going to be as I'm reaching back and pulling through.
200 feet away.
Yeah, but you're moving.
No, I'm not. When I see that you're about to throw, I stop.
But there's a chance that you could be distracting me since you're now in my field of vision versus.
Well, that'd be a jerk thing to do.
It wouldn't be intentional. You're just still getting your rangefinder out of your bag. You don't know I'm about to throw because you're 200 feet away from me.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole issue.
Now you can also say, like, okay, but there's the other thing. I hate when people, like, your argument, I hate when you're playing on courses where holes are really close together. And like they're literally, there's someone 300 feet away on another hole, and they just like stop. So you want to see that happen?
So the higher holes should keep playing.
I'm behind you. I'm talking about like you're 300, like you're in.
If you're 300 feet away, no.
Okay, well, 200 feet.
I mean, it depends on how wide open we're talking. If it's like perfectly flat field, you're putting straight at me, stopping.
You've seen tons and tons of courses where the holes are next to each other where you can stand on one hole and see. Multiple holes.
Yeah.
There are people that will not throw until nothing is happening around them. I think that just slows it down so much.
It does slow it down, but they also have the right within the rule because they're being distracted. And so therefore, their 30 seconds resets every time they're distracted.
Right. I can see how it's a distraction.
In theory,
if I'm throwing this way and someone's over there 250 feet away playing their hole, I should not be getting distracted by that.
Well, the thing is, so let's say
putting is different. If I'm putting and there's people moving right behind the basket, that's different. I'm talking about someone's in my peripheral 250 feet away playing another hole.
Okay, let's say hole nine, fine. They're throwing that's down towards saying. You. You're on hole 10. You're throwing this way. Hole nine should be the people stopping, waiting for you to throw. Because that speeds up their round because now they don't have to wait for you on hole 10.
I know. I just don't like stopping.
That's how it should happen.
I just don't like stopping that much.
The lower hole always waits for the higher hole because that speeds up the entire round.
Right.
If the higher hole waits backwards.
Hunter is wrong. 805.01 section D. Might have to look that up.
That's what I said. If a thrown disc breaks into pieces, its position is at the largest piece. That's a real rule. 805.01D.
He said Hunter is wrong. Section D. What's section D?
I promise you it's going to be word for word what I just read because I copy and pasted.
This guy paid $5 to prove that you were wrong. Yeah, I feel like he wouldn't pay five bucks.
I'm sorry for what's about to happen to him.
$5.
What's going to happen to him?
Did I copy it down wrong?
Are you about to? Oh my gosh. Did I not go four for four?
Oh.
No, you did. If a thrown disc breaks into pieces, its position is at the largest piece. 805.01D.
All right, I don't know.
A thrown disc breaks into pieces, its position is at the largest piece. 805.01D.
What the heck is Brent doing?
Real rule.
What the heck is Brent doing?
No idea.
Brent. Brother.
Right, it's on my note.
Got my hopes up.
It's on my note.
Size really. Size. Oh, because you would have been right. Yeah. We would have tied. 3 for 4.
We would have tied.
Okay.
Don't know.
All right, let's take some calls.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's see. I feel like the chat has enough spunk in here going on, so I feel like we might get some good calls tonight. You never know. All right. Jack says he got his question ignored. Jack, what was your question?
I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
It might have been when we had the chat hid because we were playing a game.
Yeah. Very cool.
Very well could have been.
Very well could have
I'm
been.
I'm scrolling back. I'm not seeing the $5 dono.
Well, if he says it.
No, because there's D Lillo and we hit that.
Yeah, but if he says it in the chat, then I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
All right, we got a caller.
Brian Earhart. Okay.
Elite team replacement.
We'll take the caller first.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
What's going on?
You guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you. How you doing?
My name is Mark. I am from Connecticut. I don't know if we've ever had a Connecticut caller.
I didn't admit, this might be the first one.
Connect, I cut. That's how I used to remember to spell Connecticut.
So I'm actually going to come at Hunter a little bit.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
Whenever you guys talk about the player of the year debate, Hunter always has to bring that he's not considering Silver Series events. First, I want to know why.
Get him.
I think the last one I brought up in Grip Locked, I'm trying to remember if I did consider it or not. Reason I didn't consider it is because it's not an Elite Series event.
Mm-hmm. That's it?
That's it.
What if it has an Elite Series field?
I don't care about the field.
Okay.
Okay, so I have two kind of points on this. And my hot take is that I do not believe that PY would win Player of the Year without these events. All right. So first I'm going to bring up just the Player of the Year, what it is. And if you go on the PGA website, it says that it takes into consideration PGA B tiers and above.
Yeah.
So obviously
that.
You have to take it into consideration. Obviously, you know that. And like Brody was saying, you do have to look at the field. If you look at Goat Hill, which was one of the two that he won, not the biggest field, but if you look at the Open at Belton, you have Calvin Heimberg, you have Paul McBeth, Chris Dickerson, Kevin Jones, Garrett Gerthy, Nicolò Castro. You have a decent field that he had to beat out. And if you remember, Paul McBeth and him were just dueling out the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
My second point of this is that last time you guys were talking about this, Hunter brought up that he was kind of going back and forth on who it was going to be. But he said, my final decision was that Ricky won the Pro Tour points and the National Tour points, and that's why he believes that Ricky would be the Player of the Year. Do you remember saying that?
I do.
Okay, so do you know how the points are made up for the Pro Tour?
The Pro Tour does factor in Silver Series.
Okay, so Ricky only won the Pro Tour by, I'm looking at it, 18 points, but he received 65 points from Silver Series.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take away his Silver Series, even just the events in general, he loses to Eagle by almost 50 points. So So personally, if I think if Eagle was the Pro Tour points winner, he would easily win Player of the Year. But because of the Silver Series events that really just pushed Ricky over that edge a little bit for the Pro Tour points, I believe that that's why he's Player of the Year.
Now, let me read this stat to you. I pulled this up for Griplocked a little bit ago. So Ricky, okay, Paul, and Eagle were the three that kind of came to the forefront. They were all in contention. Yeah. So what I did, yep, is I just wanted to see all three of them are in a field, who is winning the most. So mm-hmm, when all three of them are present, there was however many events. If they tied, if they tied for the win over the other two, I gave them half a point. Eagle, yeah, had 4.5 points.
Yep.
Paul tied Eagle at 4.5 points, and Ricky, yep, beat both of them at 6 points.
Yeah.
And if you go head to head, Ricky versus Eagle and Ricky versus Paul, Ricky wins both of those pretty handily as well. So when it all came down to, and if you win an Elite Series wins, they're pretty much all neck and neck because we counted the major as two wins, two Elite Series wins for Paul. And then we went Ricky versus Eagle. They're all within like one win there. So basically, to me, the best way to decide was head to head. And when you go head to head, Ricky wins no matter how you slice it.
Yeah. But pretty much my debate was that I just don't think you're giving Silver Series enough credit. Obviously, if you go like in order, just based off of, you have your top PGA, DGPT events. You can even put national tours in there. Those are pretty much against the entire field. And then right under that is going to be Silver Series. So yes, you could say it's not that top level because you might not have everybody there. You might not have enough points. But I really think that those Silver Series for Ricky, he had two wins. And those points really propelled him just over Eagle in those pro tour standings. So that's why I just feel like you need to give him a little bit more credit than what Ricky should be deserving for him.
I think Silver Series are important when it comes to the points. I just don't like it when we're talking about Player of the Year because okay, you never know what the field was like at a Silver Series because it's not a, yeah, top event. And it's also, years from now, we're not going to be talking about a Silver Series win, but we might be talking about a Pro Tour win because the Pro Tour, yeah, is the tour. Silver Series 5 years from now, realistically, will probably be the qualifying tour to get onto the Pro, mm-hmm, Tour. So yeah, to me, I just view Silver Series as like a step above an A tier, but still, mm-hmm, not a top tier event. So when I'm looking at just like straight up wins, I don't really care Silver Series. Now, if we go like the head-to-head matchups, I factored in some Silver Series because if it was like Paul and Rick are both there and I'm trying to see who beat who more, then I factored that one in because it was just Paul versus Rick is all I cared about. But when I'm looking at a field, I don't want to give Rick the same kudos for beating a field that was, you know, Nico and Garrett Gerther, the only other two top-name players there, yeah, as I give Paul a win when, you know, 20 of the top-name pros are there. It's hard, yeah, to know when you're looking at a Silver Series what that really means when a player wins that.
Yeah. I just think if you take Pro Tour standings into consideration when you talk about Player of the Year, then you do need to give those Silver Series credit because, like I said, if you just take away all Silver Series points, Ricky's not the leader for the Pro Tour standings. Eagle is.
Yeah.
And I believe that if Eagle was first in the Pro Tour standings, then he would be the Player of the Year. But just because Ricky got propelled just that little bit above him because of the Silver Series, then we do need to give it that little bit more credit.
Well, one thing that's interesting that I saw today, actually, I don't remember when the Pro Tour announced. I think they announced at the beginning of the year. We just all forgot about it. Is they're going to have fan and media voted Players of the Year on the Pro Tour, which I think that'll be a more true Player of the Year than the PDGA, where if you play a bunch of A tiers and stuff like that,
you can
skew it. So I'm excited to see what that result ends up being, what the players and the fans think the Player of the Year is, or what the fans and the media think the Player of the Year is. I think that that award will hold a lot more weight than the PDGA Player of the Year. But yeah, no, it's a good point that the Silver Series factor into the Pro Tour points. And if the Pro Tour points was all that mattered for Player of the Year, then I agree. Like, Silver Series are crucial because you can get 25 points playing an A-tier field. Like nothing. But I do think that in this case, those three, Paul, Ricky, Eagle, were all like head and shoulders above the field. And when you go head to head, no matter how you slice it, it goes to Rick.
Yeah. Other than that, that's pretty much it.
Awesome.
Thanks for calling in, bro.
Appreciate it.
One super quick thing before I go, and I just want to touch on the grip stuff that you guys were talking about last time.
Yeah.
I used to be a baseball player, and obviously baseball players, you know, we use pine tar on our wooden bats whenever we go.
Yep.
One thing, obviously, I like Hunter keeps saying, I don't think it really provides a competitive advantage in terms of like distance and whatever like that. But I feel like one thing you do have to consider take into consideration is build up on the disc. Because if you think of rubbing pine tar over and over and over again on a bat,
what
it
would
tends
happen
to build up. And I feel like it would lead to more illegal discs.
Yeah, that would make the disc illegal.
That would actually probably be worse because your disc would slowly change how it flies.
Yeah.
So personally, the grip I don't think is like that big of an issue in terms of like competitive advantage, but I do think you have to look at the buildup over time, just it like sticking, growing. And then obviously one part of your disc is going to be heavier on one side, and it's going to be obviously flying completely different. So I think that's one thing that needs to get taken into consideration if you talk about all that grip stuff.
No, yeah, that's a good point. That's definitely something that like the PDGA kind of already has banned, where that might be a sneaky way around being like, hey, you're adding a substance to your disc that makes it illegal.
Yep.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, love the show, man.
Appreciate it. Have a good one. All right, so
I'm gonna grab my water.
Yeah, the question that was posed earlier that we ended up missing a little bit was, with the leave of absence of Brian Earhart from the elite team on Discraft, who do you see filling that role? Filling in that spot.
My first question, is there a limited amount of spots? You might not know, or you might not be able to answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, is there like X amount of elite team spots to where like one out, one in?
I do not know. I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like it would be an Augusta situation where it's like we have 200 members.
Because I think Corey Ellis is getting very close to deserving a spot if he doesn't already.
There's a lot of people.
I think you should be. I don't know the qualifications, but I feel like it's hard to deny. You were like top 30, right?
I think
when you're playing.
Yeah, I think
that's tough to ignore.
Yeah, I think the qualifications for at least the points, because I think they do like some sort of algorithm points thing. I think most people kind of do it that way, where they just have like they make it so that there is a way for you can like can track it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know Corey Ellis like a year or two ago was tracking it, and he was like, "Yeah, I was only X amount away from being able to be on that elite team." Yeah. I think he played better this year. So
Corey Ellis has to be close.
And that's what I'm saying, is it's tough to know exactly.
But I think that didn't they just sign? Yeah, Ben Callaway is another one. Like, he's got to be close.
Oh yeah, he that's what I'm saying. I don't really know if it can be one out, one in.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm not sure, but it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens. So, all right, we got another call. Hello, hello. Yeah.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, we're good.
So I got two things for you guys.
Let's hear it.
So first, Reese's is the goat Halloween candy.
Hey, all right.
Yeah, the Snickers is good, but there's just too much going on in it for it to be the goat. Reese's and peanut butter is always just
delicious.
Reese's is a good second.
I get what you were saying about the consistency between the two sizes, but
yeah.
And so my other thing is, I think that we should have some sort of standard for all Elite Series tournaments. So there should be, have to have certain kinds of tee pads, have to have all this checked, have to have, you know, specific baskets, and there needs to be a standard across the board, because there's just too much inconsistency on tour.
Yeah, I think there's certain things that obviously we have definitely spoken about and talked about, like things that we would love to see. I think, you know, having a company come up and say, hey, we want to sponsor the tour and we want you guys to use our baskets at every tour event. Like, I think that is something that would not only be awesome to have a consistent basket throughout the year, but also another way for, you know, to have a gigantic sponsor. And then, yeah, things like you're talking about too, like the tee pads and stuff. I don't think I necessarily want to like have a shape of like, hey, every tee pad needs to be this hexagon or this, you know, rectangle or whatever it is. But I definitely think there should be certain things with the tee pad of where like the width of the tee pad needs to be a minimum of this, and the length of the tee pad needs to be a minimum of this, and maybe even something on there too of where like there can't be a drop off. Cause like at Worlds, one of the tee pads, there was like a legitimate drop, like you were in a tree house and there was like, you know, a net in front of the tee pad in case you basically fell off of it. So I think there's like certain things of where it's like the tee pad, like that should be the one spot when you're on the disc golf course as a player that you're not concerned with your safety. And I think obviously from watching tons of coverage, I feel like we all can agree that there has been many tournaments where that isn't the case. And that should be something that should never happen. So yeah, I agree with you. I think there definitely needs to be a handful of things that can change, but like you said, like the tee pads thing, if we just even want to talk about that, that is a pretty large change for a lot of courses to go in and put tee pads in, not just time wise, but also money wise. So it's one of those weird situations of where it's like, yes, we want this, we want this, we want this, but can we get it right now? I don't know if we can.
Yeah. Well, the PDGA has had tour standards in place for a long time, but they've been kind of minuscule, I guess is maybe the right word. Maybe not minimal. Mm-hmm. Minimal is the word I'm looking for. But with the national tour disappearing and the pro tour being the official tour, they have come out and said that like the pro tour is going to be able to work with the PDGA to create their own rules and standards and stuff like that. To where I think the pro tour would be the people who'd be more active on making sure things like that happen. Mm-hmm. Disc checks, I think it's basically impossible for every disc.
It has to be random. It has to be like a drug test.
I think it should be random, so it can happen at any point to any player, and mm-hmm. every winner, their bag should be checked. So if you win a pro tour event, their bag, every disc in their bag is checked.
And
so
then if they do have an illegal disc and then someone else wins, then that person's bag gets checked.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes down the line.
Yeah, exactly. And so yeah. I think that should happen so that like players entering the event basically now know it can happen to me at any time. And if I win this event, that way there's no intentional cheating. I don't think there is any right now. I think there might be a lot of unintentional cheating just from manufacturers sending out discs and the weight changing based on humidity and random stuff that happens. And then like a 180 gram destroyer is just out there and you don't know. You think it's a 174 and it's just like, oh crap. I didn't know that was illegal.
I think that would also be very interesting to see because right now you have a lot of players that are throwing discs that they didn't get from the manufacturer, right? They got them from someone else, or they found them somewhere and they fell in love with it. And you have a lot of people that are just kind of slowly incorporating discs into their bag, where I think if this happened and you got dinged at one tournament, I think what that would do is it would put a lot of pressure on the manufacturers to send their players discs that were legal. But then it also would now change it up to where players would be pretty much just playing with discs specifically from their manufacturer because they don't want to risk.
Well, the tough part is like if I switch, let's say I'm unsponsored right now, I switch next year to Discraft and I'm like, I really need.
Is it just the weight? Is that really the big one? Is just
that's
the
big
weight?
Illegal one. Stiffness is another one because stiffness is
how
an
do you judge
one.
That?
There's a flexibility test that when X amount of weight is pushed down on a disc, it has to flex.
Can you is there an easy way of you testing that yourself?
No, see, that's on the manufacturer.
But that's
something that can't change. Once you get a disc as a person, you can't change the flexibility. It can be as flexible as you want. It can't be too stiff. So a disc isn't going to magically stiffen.
No, I know, but how do I know if a disc is too stiff or not when I get it?
When you get it, it's not on you. It's on the manufacturer.
It is on me if I play with it and I get a stroke penalty. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
it's
but
tough.
If you're a sponsored player,
but if I'm not
you should be like,
player.
Hey, what the heck?
But if I'm not a sponsored player.
Then that one's tough.
That's why I think it's
regardless,
like you can't,
manufacturer,
everyone can weigh their disc.
It like, could also be random in the sense of like the PDGA can show up to your manufacturing plant at any point and make sure the discs you're producing are up to snuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because basically what could happen is let's say I send in a...
My disc matches.
Let's go a Luna. I send in a Luna. That was the first disc came to my mind. There's no reason for me saying this. I send in a Luna to the PDGA and it's tested. It's approved. They send it back to me. And I now make it in the stiffest plastic I possibly can.
Yeah.
It's never tested again. So I can ship them out. Actually, I think the Proto Lunas were too stiff, but they were never tested again. So the Proto Lunas come out and they're like stiff as literal wood. Like wood might flex more than a Luna, those Proto Lunas. to where like they were probably illegal discs, but the PDGA doesn't recheck it.
Yeah.
So once the Luna's approved, it's a PDGA approved disc, it's set, it's golden. The only thing they check is weight. So I think that should be something else that could happen.
Yeah, because like with the slight retool that Discmania did on the new Razor Claw 2 that are coming out, like you can't really retool something and not have it reapproved, but they definitely did not go back through the approval process, I don't think. Maybe they did. But and then like they were saying they tweaked to the MD3s and the P2s a little bit after the prototypes came out, but like what kind of tweaking is that? You know, is that something that's still falling within those specifications, or is it now a different disc that should have been reapproved?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you definitely bring up an interesting topic. So we'll see what happens. But like I said, I think the big one with like getting the requirements and stuff for tournaments in the future, I think it just literally, it's just a money thing. When the money is there, I think it'll be real easy to do it. When the money's not there, it's going to be real tough to get people to pay for that stuff. So.
Yeah. And that's why I think it should only be on Elite Series initially, at least. You know,
it makes it a little bit easier.
Have like pro tour cards and all that. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
For sure.
So
thanks for calling in, brother. All right. We got a couple.
Someone said, does your rule kill, Doxin, $3 dono, does your rule kill the demand for max weight disc? The rule I'm talking about is already a rule. Like it's already, I'm talking about enforcing a rule that already exists. I'm not making up a rule.
Why would that kill the demand for max weight disc?
Because the demand for max weight disc is because like you might get a 185 or something. I don't know.
Are they nervous to getting a
180 rock is still legal and is still a 180 rock.
But you can also, that's my thing. You can also, everyone can like weigh their disc.
I was going to say, just go out and buy a scale.
Yeah, you can buy a scale on Amazon for $10 and make sure, if you really care about.
If you're that concerned.
Well, like, you should be concerned if you're playing in tournaments that matter, right? Like if you're an amateur, who cares?
Yeah.
Like you can use the old man chipper in a golf tournament if you really want. Who cares? But yeah, if you really are concerned with it, just buy a scale for $10 and weigh it. And then we got another one from Justin Smith. Bogey Bros, when will you come play Quaker's Challenge? And which is harder, Brody, BG or DG?
Ball, golf, or disc? Quaker's Challenge, we're actually, that is one of them on our, we don't have it
where
on
is like, that? Official.
It's a York, PA.
I could have just kept reading and said Central Pennsylvania.
But that's where Trevor's home courses are. Something we want to go back, and we're going to do two Bogey Bro battles.
I kind of need to be there.
On Trevor's home courses. Whether that's the one we finish this year out with, or if Richmond, Virginia is the one we finish this year out with, we're not positive yet. We're doing one more this year, and then the next one's going to start our 2022 Bogey Bro battles.
I want to be there for his...
I'm excited for Trevor's homecoming.
Like, will he get a key to the city?
No.
Will he get a newspaper article written about him? Like a little headline.
Did you listen to this?
Trevor week? Back.
I've gotta ask this question because this goes right in with the ball golf disc golf. Did you listen to this week's part of my take?
You slide with what you just said.
The ball golf disc golf. It's because said BG or
I'm
DG.
I'm letting it slide.
It's because they asked it, just, and it'll make sense when I say what I'm about to say. Did you listen to it? In it, they're talking about what were they talking about? The analogy they were using was basically, punter. So someone's kicker got hurt. Their punter came in, kicked off the actual kickoff after a touchdown. Yeah. It went 30 yards straight OB, and they didn't kick. It was the Steelers. They didn't kick again the rest of the game at all. And they were saying, like, a kicker, you should be able to kick. And then they go, for instance, if you're a golfer, then they go, no, let's go this way. If you're a ball golfer, they switched it and they said ball golfer. They said, if you're a ball golfer, he goes,
who said that? Big Cat?
PFT.
That's monumental.
He goes, I'm pretty sure it's PFT. He goes, if you're a ball golfer, he's like, and then you switch to real golf, you should be able to know how to throw it in the fairway. So he was calling disc golf real golf.
Yeah. See, he knows. Yeah. He knows. That's why he was doing that.
But it made me, because at first they said frisbee golf. He goes, no. If you're playing ball golf and then you switch to golf, you should be able to know how to throw it in the middle of the fairway.
He's in on it. I love that.
I just loved that the ball golf disc golf has made it to part of my take, the biggest sports podcast in the world.
I love it.
Ball golf, disc golf.
That's all. You guys did that in the chat.
We've done it.
Everyone listening, you guys did.
You reached them.
Unbelievable.
I thought that was funny. I was listening and I had to like replay it because I was like, did I just hear them say ball golf? Am I listening to Grip Locked? It was pretty funny. It was a funny moment. Anyways, ball golf, disc golf, which one's harder, Brody?
I'm not answering that. That my if someone wants to call in and debate me, I would love to hear.
Hugh, you've been banned from the chat, but you're not banned from the phone line.
I would love to hear someone's reasoning why disc golf is harder, but I don't have to. Golf is way harder.
Man, dude, there's so much more angles in disc golf, dude. All
right.
We got a caller.
All right, call a caller.
Well, watch it be Hugh.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
What's good? You're on.
Hey, it's Clayton from Peoria, Illinois area.
Peoria. What's good, man?
Not much. First thing, not really my topic, but you guys were talking about overtimes a couple weeks ago. Did you happen to watch that Illinois-Penn State 9 overtime game?
I saw it on the GameCast, and I did not. It made me have to double check what the new rule was, because I don't know. I think they changed it a couple years ago at first, but like, because it was funny too. Someone said, this was actually on another podcast. They were talking about like how going into next game, they're like, you have to take into account, like they just had a 9 overtime game. And I was like, I was thinking in my head, yeah, but like, that's like 6th place. Like it wasn't like they went into like 30 minutes of extra. Yeah, basketball.
What was the
like,
Syracuse game back in the day?
That's 5 minutes,
Madness.
5 minutes, 5 minutes.
It didn't go to like, it was going to like 2 a.m.
Yeah. So
it was
like
13 overtimes, I think.
But like nine overtimes in college football is like, yeah, you had to do 15 extra offensive plays. But no, I did not see it, but I did look at it, and I could not believe my eyes.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. It's the first 3 times they start from the 25. Mm-hmm. And then they just start from the like 2.5 yard
line.
Yeah,
they just go 2-point conversion, 1 play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it was pretty exciting. I'm an Illinois fan. So,
oh, that's really exciting for you then.
But no, I wanted to talk about, I think you guys talked about it a couple podcasts ago about making putting harder. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys weren't a fan of baskets being close to like tree lines, like you wanted a circle basically pretty open. I just think the one thing that and I know a lot of people hate comparing golf to disc golf, but the one thing about golf is you can hit a golf shot, you know, 10 feet from the hole, but you have a downhill, you know, 2-3 foot bender, and you can't, I mean, it's
you have to be super defensive. Yeah, you have to be super defensive on that putt. You can't be aggressive.
Exactly. And so golfers know that. And, you know, a lot of times they'll play to the center of the green, or because it's, you know, a 30-foot uphill putt rather than, you know, a 10-foot downhill putt or whatever. Or, you know, they know where to hit the ball to have a more aggressive putt. And I think one thing about disc golfers, they get so mad of not having this, you know, 30-foot ring all the way around. But there's usually, you know, at least one side of the basket that is wide open. That, you know, your approach has to involve that. Where that's one thing about golf is you know, you have to know where to hit that, you know, ball. And I forget his name, the 2018 world champ,
Barsby.
Greg Barsby. Yeah. Yeah. I seen his interview going into 19, when it was at, Northwoods Gold. He thought the, greens were not fair because you could be 20 feet from the hole and you wouldn't have a putt. But there's, I've played that course, many times, and there's always at least one side of the green that is wide open. And I think that there needs to be more of that in golf, whether or not it's, you know, water close. I know a lot of people hate water real close to a basket, but there's also the other side of the basket where you can play safe to. And I think that's one thing. I'm not a big fan of making baskets smaller. I think we need to make there be a specific spot you need to hit on the green rather than not every time, but I think that's one way of making putting a little harder.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. I think though the issue, and this might be kind of what Hunter was talking about though, is there are like flukiness on some greens. Like what you're saying is I agree. Like you shouldn't just feel like if you throw it with inside of 33 feet, 360 degrees around the basket, that you're just going to have a wide open putt. But if you are going to have trees or some sort of element of kind of making it to where if you throw it on that side of the basket, that you're going to have a more difficult putt. If you're going to do that, then you definitely have to make sure that the other side, there's no flukiness of where one disc lands there and has a perfect putt, and then another disc lands there and there's a tree in the middle, right? So I think that's the issue with some of these courses, of where there will be like one tree or one something on one side of the basket. And if your disc lands just perfectly, because again, no one is really, especially with discs, like golf, they can really do a good job of controlling the spin on the ball and having it land and not do anything too funky. Disc golf, you're at the mercy of like the ground. And so if your disc hits a root or doesn't hit a root or hits a tall patch of grass, or I mean, because the you know, when you get up next to the green, looking at it, it's not like a golf course where it's like, oh wow, this whole area is all the same. Like, sure, the slopes are a little bit different, but the actual grass is cut the same, right? You're not going to get any weird bounces or kicks. Disc golf, that's not the case. So I think just taking out the flukiness of like having that one tree or some sort of issue of one thing being over there and you're like, oh my gosh, like I got stuck behind this, is unbelievable. I think that's where, I don't know, that's probably what you're going at, is just like take out the luck factor. You throw a good shot, you should be rewarded.
Well, I just think, yeah, exactly. Because my thing is like, I don't mind trees on inside 30 feet. I just hate the situations where there is legitimately no putt inside 30 feet, like no putt at all. Like, I don't like someone being 15 feet from the basket and whether it be a bad luck or whatever, they can't putt. I don't mind 15 feet on the right side being a harder putt where you have to like straddle out and maybe throw an Annie, flatten in. You have to strategize it.
Do you like OB 15 feet away from the basket?
I'm not a huge fan of it, but I...
Because that would be the
in
same
certain
kind of,
scenarios, I am okay with it.
Because that would be the same kind of
it
idea.
It depends a lot on the hole.
Yeah, for sure.
I just don't... I don't like the visuals or even playing, but of I'm 10, 15 feet from the basket to where I didn't throw an awful shot.
The way I view it is
I
almost
just,
like...
I just have no putt.
The way I view it is almost like a basket's in a cove, right? Mm-hmm. And so... Like you're throwing, like a good example is,
but see,
hole,
a cove I'm okay with.
A good example
like
is
that.
Hole four at USDGC, I believe. One, four. Two, three, four. Yeah, hole four at USDGC.
That's that whole circle's pretty open.
Yeah, but that's my, to me, like that's a good hole of where if you don't land in this one little area, like if you go too long or too short, you're gonna have a really, really hard putt.
But now imagine if the wood line was like the basket. The whole wood line is way closer on the back end.
I mean, it's definitely not a circle.
Feet.
It's definitely not a circle.
But it's like
it's 15.
It's a decent.
It's probably
bit.
15, 20.
And the wideness out, some like the width on the outside is the circle, and then it goes into like 15
maybe
on the back.
But yeah,
regardless,
I mean, I
you
guess
get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I think. But because my point is, if you want to go back to the golf idea, right, of like your uphill putting downhill,
slopes. Yeah.
But you still have a chance at making it.
You do, but if you do try to make it,
it's a very risky.
Yeah,
like you might roll off the green,
make it and miss it. Yeah,
but you have a chance.
It's very.
What
small.
I'm saying is, imagine being in that position, and you have like for some reason there's just stuff all around it where you don't have even a chance. You can't like you don't even have a decision of you're not you're late in the game.
I see what you're saying,
hole
but you gotta look at the percentages too. Like
well,
the
hole
percentage.
16, you hit the green, you're on the green. Yeah, you hit the bad side of the green. It wasn't a great shot. But you're down one, you're going to run that putt in golf. Now imagine hole 16 in disc golf. You hit the green. Yeah, it was a bad shot. You're on the bad side of the green. But now you're in a thorn bush. You have no shot at all.
Well, I hate thorn bushes. You know that.
Yeah, so now you have no shot at all. You can't even decide to run the putt. I don't mind. Like, you're on the bad side of the green. You got some trees to deal with.
The only thing about,
that's
like,
all I don't like.
The only thing that is weird is, like, when you have, like, a downhill putt, it's, like, people are trying to get that putt in two, right? They're if I make it, it was a mistake. I'm really just trying to get something close to make the next one, mm-hmm. and they mess up. When you put me in a thorn bush and I have no putt at making it, I still can probably just like toss something out and make the next putt.
But
it's putting really,
disc golf's different.
That I know. That's why I think you have to be okay with you threw a bad upshot. You basically just lost a stroke that way.
I think you should still have a shot at the stroke.
So we'll see. But thanks for calling in. That was a good topic. I always love that.
Yeah. One last little small thing. the majors in golf, I think, are so fun because each major has their own thing to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Augusta.
Except
you know,
for the PGA.
Usually
still trying to find
really
it.
Hard greens. U.S. Open has really thick rough. Mm-hmm. British Open, was it usually windy and
bad
stuff
weather.
Like that?
Yep.
I just think it'd be cool if our majors had, you know, they could switch venues, but they all maybe always stuck with like this major's known for this or this major's known for that.
USDGC is the only one that has that right now.
Yeah,
what's that?
Essentially.
USDGC is the only one that has something like that, and I don't even know.
Right, right.
I think the only thing you really say is they're known for hole 17. I don't even think it's safe to say.
And the ropes.
Yeah, but I don't even think it's safe to say like they're known for like having the hardest course because people still shred out there. People are still suing double digits.
USDGC is known for ropes. Like when you see USDGC, you're picturing rope, like OB everywhere.
Yeah, but it's
to where like you could take USDGC and keep the essence of it on a different property if it was just like tons of OB everywhere. If you took USDGC and put it in the woods,
but that's
like
kind of what the Pro Tour is turning into. Like they pretty much just put OB everywhere because that's the only way of getting scoring separation at some of these courses.
But it's just USDGC is just different, man.
I just think it'd be cool if we had a major that was known for woods. And then a major that was known for, you know, open golf and a major. And then, you know, we could have like, you know, you were talking about Nadal the other day, always wins on clay. We'd have those people that like dominate on one. And I don't know. I just thought it'd be cool.
No, I like the idea of like the woods major, the open major. Tough part is one is called the World Championship. So, like, that can't always be a woods major because then, like, you're never going to have an open player.
Yeah.
That's a whole tough thing.
The majors.
That's something completely different. So, yeah. All right. Well, appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling in. Have a wonderful night.
Yep. Yeah, you do.
Take care. All right. Couple more calls. Let's keep them going. Let's keep them going. Dude, chat's going off tonight.
Yeah,
if you guys can catch this, I know, like, the World Series is on. It's like some people, I mean, are you upset that you're not watching the World Series?
I am not a baseball guy.
I'm not either. Silas?
No, I'm not a baseball guy.
Okay, yeah.
I hope the Braves win.
Why?
Just because my granddad and my great-granddad, and then because of them too, my dad was like a Braves fan. It's gotten less and less Braves fan.
Is your dad watching?
No.
Oh, he doesn't care.
But like my dad, if you ask my dad, like, who's your baseball team? He would say Braves. You know what I mean? It's like that. Like that type of rooting.
We had a kid come to
our
house.
Like our whole family's like Braves fans, but none of us really are Braves fans.
We had a kid come to our house in a full Braves uniform.
I was like,
oh, sweet. And then like.
Oh, someone said Braves did win.
45. They didn't. The game's not over.
There's no way.
There's no way.
They are winning at the moment.
Oh,
he retracted.
He just deleted it. like 45 minutes after he left our house, grand slam. And I was like, oh my God, this kid's probably going nuts right now. And they end up losing.
Yeah.
They went up 4-0 off a grand slam and then ended up losing. My gosh. We got a call here, Silas?
We do not.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I also love
we need to keep talking.
Part of my take on Monday. Also thought this was hilarious since we're talking about the World Series. They just like, they're like, you know what? Why don't we just go ahead and shoot our Wednesday intro? They're like, welcome to Wednesday. The Braves are your World Series champion. Like just for 5 minutes, just acted like the Braves just won tonight.
I think some
and people were getting mad. Like you're going to jinx them. And they're like, no, it's Atlanta sports. Like, saying they're going to win, like you can't jinx Atlanta sports. There's no way to jinx it. They're already jinxed enough.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about the Falcons loss. That can get some tears. Hello, hello? Can you hear us? I can hear the static. Julius Caesar.
Dang, that was Hugh. I could feel it.
Was that my first Julius Caesar official?
Wow.
See,
we almost got Julius Caesar
27-3. That's what people are nervous about.
We almost got Julius Caesar at at the Benjamin's, the restaurant we went to the other night.
Gosh, I was in a straight stare off.
Yeah, it was the owner's wife. We didn't even know.
Should it be called Mama Sue's? I feel like I would go to that place.
I would go to Mama
more.
Sue's more than Benjamin's.
Right? Isn't Mama Sue's a much better restaurant
name?
Well,
it depends
than
on what
Benjamin's?
You're serving. I feel like the food they serve suits a Benjamin's. Mama Sue's, I would want more like heavy country
home,
food.
Like home.
Like biscuits and
food.
Gravy.
Maybe that's what they do for breakfast, though. Their breakfast does pop off in the morning.
Chicken,
we might have to try
chicken
them.
And dumplings.
Wait, are they open for breakfast?
Yes.
We might have to try them for breakfast. Mama Sue's, baby. Got to go for the dessert. Mama Sue's.
Yeah, we got to go back. We got to try Mama Sue's dessert.
We got someone? Hello, hello? Is this the same caller? Are we getting pranked right now, Silas? Are you pranking us?
Silas, are you sure this is working?
Are you pranking us with these fake callers?
Silas, stop pranking us.
Oh, my gosh.
Silas is going to be like, we have a caller. And he's going to be like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Just Rickroll us.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
I don't know what that means.
You don't know what Rickrolling is?
No.
How old are you, Silas?
Wait.
How old do you think I am?
You're 19.
Have you heard this song before?
Did you just turn 20?
Yeah.
You just turned 20.
Wait, have you heard the Rickroll song?
No. I mean, if he doesn't know what Rickrolling is, he's probably never heard
the song. All right, so Rickrolling, Silas, I'll give you a little rundown of what happened. So back in the day, it's like, I'm like, dude, have you seen this video? And you're like, no, I haven't. What the heck? And I'm like, dude, this was the craziest thing happens in this video. And you're like, really? I'm like, yeah. And then I send you the YouTube video, but I have it timestamped to where it starts at a specific part in the video.
Yeah.
And it's the song that goes, never want to give you up. Never want to make you down.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Get Rickrolled. Oh, my friend Rickrolled me. So there was like this thing back in the day you could download like it wasn't a virus.
Silas is not 12.
It wasn't a virus, but it wasn't, yeah. But it might as well have been a virus.
I'm not.
To where when they sent you the link, it basically was just a, what's the thing called? Is it a macro that just makes it, on a computer, it makes a thing happen over and over and over.
Oh, it just opens all the windows.
Yeah.
It opens, my gosh, I remember that.
Clicked on it, and it just started opening
flooded.
An infinite amount.
Like, you just won solitaire.
Yeah.
And, like, all the cards
it
are just
It just opened
going.
An infinite amount of Rick Ashley, Never Gonna Give You Up, on my computer. And it just, like, the only way to do it is you had to shut your whole computer down and restart it.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was it.
How many views does that video have? Because I bet it has to be so much. That's what we should do. We should somehow make a video so bad. No, we need to make a video so bad. It has 1 billion views.
What do you think the most viewed video is on YouTube?
I know what it is.
What is it?
What is it?
Isn't it
off
Baby?
Off the top of your head, do you know?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's not Baby by Justin Bieber? No. Oh, is it Oakum Gum Style?
Nope.
No way.
Oh, no. It's the toy. It's the toy video.
I don't know.
This baby's got 2.6 bill.
There's one with almost 7 bill. I believe it's Baby Shark.
Viewed.
Oh.
Baby Shark is either 1 or 2 on the list.
Up there.
Yeah, Baby Shark. 9.5 billion.
Oh, dude, Despacito, goodness. Though. 7.6.
You know why fun. Baby Shark is? I have 2 nieces.
Yeah, because they play it
all
the time.
They never listen to it once. If you start a Baby Shark dance night, it's a Baby Shark dance night. They're playing it 35 times each night.
Dude, right. We need to start coming up with kids songs. What bath song at 4.6 mil?
That's why kids YouTube channels
they
are killing
to the same
it.
Thing over
because
and
all
over
they again.
Johnny yes papa.
Yeah, I have that
5.8
song stuck in my head.
Mil billion.
Johnny,
these are Bill.
Yes, papa.
These are Bill with the B.
Yeah,
Masha and the Bear.
It's because my niece just will get on Coco Melon and just watch the same Coco Melon episode 50 times in a day. Because they don't. They're just watching it. They're just watching something in front of them.
Dude, Sorry is actually higher than Baby.
We need to start a kids channel. Do we have a caller?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, we're getting
Silas, I'm calling this tech issues.
We're getting pumped.
That's 3 in a row. I'm calling tech issues.
Wait, what's Lean On by Major?
You want me
Lazy?
To call in?
You want to test it?
See what's happening?
Hey, Dark Horse is number 20. I would like I feel
Katy
like I'm
Perry.
Good for 3.17 bill. I feel like I'm good for 1,000 of those views. You're welcome, Katie. Wheels on the Bus.
Okay. Another kid's song.
Phonic song with 2 words. Learning
I'm
going to
try calling in. I'm going to see what it's like calling into our show. Yeah, we're not available right now. Yeah.
Baby Shark. Doo, 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 doo. Baby Shark. Doo, 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 doo. Baby Shark. Doo, 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 doo.
I think
Baby
our call
shark.
Line's just completely out.
Daddy,
the second
shark,
one just said we're unable to complete your call.
Do Shady Dark, dark.
What'd you say, Shady Dark? All right, the call line's down.
We'll just take some questions then from the chat.
So put a question in the chat. I am now getting called back. Silas, are you calling me back right now?
Oh, that's you.
Silas with the control. Oh.
I'm trying to see if this works.
Dude, Baby Shark is actually a fire song. Someone definitely has made a remix to Baby Shark. There we go. Hello.
Hello, am I on?
Oh, you're on. Heck yeah, Silas. Let's
go. Is it me?
It is you. It is I.
Hey,
what's good?
From Roanoke, Virginia. How you guys doing?
Oh, very close. Very nice.
Yeah, not very far. Hey, so I've been wondering this for a while. This could maybe be a debate between you guys. If every manufacturer were to put together like a double seam, who do you think would win?
First off, you said this is Caleb from Roanoke?
Yeah.
Is this Lil Boozy?
It is.
Oh, it's Lil Boozy.
Lil Boozy.
What up, brother? Yeah, we did just see your wife at the Liberty game.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
You guys were sitting in near a section. I was like, look to your left and see if Brody's there.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. What manufacturer would win doubles? Okay. So obviously, I think you got to start with. I think the easiest way of doing it is just going FPO, right? So you go Paige and Paul, right? That's
yeah. Wait, we want mixed doubles?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I'm assuming you're saying, right?
Well, do MPO first.
Mixed doubles is discraft all day. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
100%. Who's Kristen Latitude?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Emerson?
That drops. Yeah. Okay. What about Cat Prodigy?
With Kevin Jones? You got Paige and Paul. They're winning every day. Okay, yeah. MPO.
Yeah. FPO. No, Innova. Ricky. I think Ricky and Evelina. That would be good. Ricky Evelina, Paige, Paul would be a good matchup.
I still think you can't say every day. I can't say every day now. I do think Paige and Paul
take
are winning.
Take your words out of your mouth.
I can't say every day. I don't even know if I'd say most days. I think it'd be 51-49.
Yeah, take your words. Oh, Dickerson and Katrina Allen.
I think Evelina, Ricky versus Paige.
On a Woods course? Dickerson, Katrina Allen?
New London.
Stipulations.
There's so many stipulations. I hate when something starts and then Brody just starts throwing these like super strenuous.
I'm trying to get everyone on my side. That's what you gotta do. You gotta throw out stipulations.
MPO. Discraft's tough. Who would you say is Discraft's second best player?
It has to
Paul.
Be Adam.
Adam Hammond. So we have Paul and Adam.
Yeah.
Innova, we've got Ricky.
Calvin.
Calvin. Oh, that's a tough team to beat.
That's a tough team.
But you do have Kevin Jones, Chris Dickerson, Prodigy.
Another good team.
You do like Kyle Klein and Eagle.
Kyle Klein and Eagle, that's a really
Kyle
tough
Klein
team.
And Eagle.
You could also go Simon Eagle.
Yeah.
They might win just because of chemistry. Simon Eagle chemistry. Chemistry in doubles is a lot more than people think.
It must be because I think it's nothing.
Yeah. I bet Trevor and I could beat you and a partner in doubles.
Who can I pick?
Who do you want to pick?
Okay, I'll pick Paul.
All right. Set it up. Time and date me.
You think you're beating them?
Send me a time and date.
He's not beating us.
Time and date. Send it to me.
I mean, I literally could take like another like top 50 player in the world and we'd beat you guys every time.
Time and date. We'll show up.
You also have to remember Trevor has to putt.
No, we're playing doubles. Best shot. Best shot doubles.
Yeah.
Trevor in doubles is a filthy putter because he putts first.
Trevor is very good
at
doubles.
And he has no pressure behind him, and he doesn't miss.
He is very good at putting. Doesn't miss. That's another.
Doesn't miss. He doesn't miss. He puts. Paul is terrified to play Trevor
time
in doubles.
And place,
someone
man.
Said Gannon time Burr and Silas. I think that's a good.
Burr and Silas.
Let's go, Gannon.
Are you ready to play a five-hour round, Silas? That's the real question. Hey, you got to make sure you have a lot.
Shots fired.
Well, it's not shots fired. We just
at Silas.
At Silas, yeah. Have you played New London with Silas? It's a five-hour round.
That's true.
Whoa.
Okay.
All right, Lil Boozy. Are you coming? Are you coming in town for? Is he coming in town for anything?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know his schedule. I don't know. I don't know the schedule.
I didn't know if we were doing. We got to do something over the winter break. We got to do something.
We'll probably do something.
We got to do like a meetup.
Who do you think wins?
I like the KJ Dickerson.
Mm.
All right.
If you catch them when they're hot, like if Kevin's firing on all cylinders, it's a tough team.
Who's your pick?
I'll probably go with Paul and Adam just because if their putting is on, they're not gonna miss.
Paul and Adam.
Like if Adam's putting well, like
I think I'm gonna go. Man, that is tough. Ricky Calvin would have to be a very specific course.
And I was going to say, I think Adam and Paul can compete with pretty much everyone at any type of course.
I think I have to agree
with you.
Like
Dickerson and KJ, it's going to have to be wooded.
Because if we're going...
Calvin and Ricky, it's going to have to be open. But Eagle and Kyle have to be open.
I would almost take Eagle Kyle Klein over Ricky Calvin on an open course. Because Ricky on... Eagle on an open course.
Yeah, I mean, he's OP.
Yeah. So I think I have to agree with you. If we're going like we don't know the course, we have to pick our people first, I think I have to go Paul Adam. Just
I think
because
that's the safe play.
That's your safest bet.
Yeah.
So. That's fair.
Dang. That's a tough one, though. I like that.
That's a good little mind
I might have to ask Trevor that to get his answer on Grip Lock.
Yeah, do it. All right, Lil Boozy. Thanks for calling in, brother.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
All right, man. Source LVC. Okay.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either.
A Las Vegas challenge.
Oh. The Las Vegas challenge is letting us know that the Braves are going to win tonight.
Oh, never mind.
They literally said Braves are going to take it tonight. And then they said source LVC. So, all right. So we have one more. We'll do one more call. If not. Oh. Someone just called in. Hello.
Hey, how's it going? This is Dylan from Washington State.
Dylan, what's good, brother?
Good. I wanted to call in and kind of revisit the standstill debate and maybe talk about making disc golf harder with certain types of roughs.
Okay.
So I noticed that on specifically like open courses, like a ball golf course or maybe USCGC, there's a lot of OB and distance to kind of make difficulty in scoring and such.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea would be to create like a roped zone, like an OB, that if you land in maybe like a par 4, par 5, you have to throw a mandatory standstill and you're not stroked. And I just think this would be another way of creating it like more difficulty on courses without like automatically stroking a player, where you still kind of have a shot to get up and down if you're a really good player like Eagle that can go like 400 foot sidearm or something. And I kind of want to know what you guys thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only kind of weird thing with that is just obviously it's going to be so new of where people are going to think it's going to be really awkward. Right. And
yeah.
My whole thing is like, you have to get through the awkward phase, right? I'll talk to another married man over here. I don't know. Are you married? Are you dating? What's your relationship status?
Who?
You.
Hunter or me? Oh, I'm just a 21-year-old, just loves disc golf.
All right, perfect. All right.
He's married to the
Sweet.
Game.
Yeah.
Well, I'll explain something that kind of goes on in the relationship. Okay. So at the beginning, you're kind of like on eggshells, right? You're always on your best behavior. You like don't want to like make any like weird things. And then eventually you realize like, I have to just like accept the awkwardness. And then once you get through the awkwardness of like each other and you realize that you both respect each other, even though you're being awkward, aka yourself, then you're hunky dory. Sports need to do that too, right? Like if you're gonna throw in a change and stuff, it's going to be awkward. Like if I'm watching disc golf and I see someone just standing there, not running up and throwing in a wide open field, it's gonna look weird and it's gonna be awkward. But if I see that for years after years after years, then it won't be awkward anymore. It'll just be normal. So if it's a good rule change to where it's going to make players again. I think good rule changes are ones that increase score separation and also award good shots and punish bad shots.
Yep, definitely. I just want to say something that made me think about this, besides you guys mentioning the standstills in the podcast before, was that when I think of like in golf with the whole bunkers, like, the whole point of the bunker isn't to give you an OB stroke, but it's to make your next shot a lot difficult. Mm-hmm. And like, I think disc golf just doesn't have that outside of the woods. And like, for example, when you're in the woods and you throw in the rough, you're going to probably have to throw a standstill to get out of it.
Yep.
Because you have no room to run up. So that's kind of what made me think about, well, like maybe the Pro Tour USDC needs to try out and see how that would work on a par four or something.
Yeah. And I think too, like the one cool thing about playing on golf courses is if you can play on a course that has like deep bunkers, right? So they're dug out. So when you're golfing, it makes it more difficult because you can't just hit, let's say you hit into a fairway bunker, right? And you're 200 yards away. You would normally hit a five iron, but your five iron is going to come out at an angle that it would just going to blast straight into the hillside that is kind of built out. That would be the same thing with disc golf of if you can build out holes or like big, again, like kind of big things so it doesn't look super weird. It's like a little tiny hole. But if you can dig out stuff, move some dirt around to where now if you're off the fairway, you now have like almost like a 5 or 10 foot like hill in front of you. You're not going to be able to throw like your normal line drive kind of throw. You're going to have to throw like a big hyzer. And if it's 400 feet, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for you to get there than if you just had a straight shot. So I think that is another thing that could kind of be cool is incorporating what you know golf does is like digging out these bunkers and making you have to make a decision of like trying to throw it just
how aggressive
you want to try to go just right over the hillside to get it there and I don't know, it could be interesting, but yeah, I think courses definitely are going to start playing around with it because I do think at a certain point people will start wanting to see score separation and also not having like people shoot 14, 15, 13 under every single round.
Yep.
So,
and I just think the point where disc golf kind of is failing on the open courses is there really is only the two things to make it more difficult, you know, the pushing the distance and making a bunch of OB.
Yep.
When, I mean, the wind comes into play. I mean, I guess they can put mozzarella sticks up. Like, they're kind of messing around with that.
You just got to make it to where if you're off the fairway, you know, you're punished. You have to throw a harder next shot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I think it would make it so if, let's say, it's an 800 foot hole, someone can shank their drive like 200 feet, and then the top five player can throw a full 600 foot shot to still birdie it.
Yep.
And that's kind of bad. Whereas, and then, like, I don't know.
No, I agree. I think that
there's too much OB, too. I feel like there's a lot of times there's too much OB to where it's just kind of like, oh, you know, bad break, you're instantly getting a stroke. Instead of if it's a standstill, you can kind of still recover maybe a par, maybe a birdie if you have a really good skill set on that backhand forehand combination from standstill.
Yeah. No, I think if you can build in more natural stuff like that, to where you don't have to just rope everything off as OB, then I think that's going to make it more difficult. And like you said, doesn't go like the, oh man, you automatically lose a stroke, you're done. It gives you the ability to still not lose a stroke, but now it forces your hands of how, like Hunter was saying, how risky you want to be. So,
yeah.
Yep. No, you bring a good point, cool. Dude. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, thank you guys. Hope they think about that on the Pro Tour in the future, maybe.
Appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Have a good night.
All right. Take it easy. All right. There you have it. Wow. Jeez.
One thing I would think people would be interested, or I'm interested, I think people would be surprised, is how far pros can throw a standstill.
Should we do a little video? How far do you think pros can do standstill? Yeah. I can reach out to some people and have them throw standstill.
I would bet Paul could throw pretty decent, maybe 450 plus standstill. Paul, 450. Yeah.
Okay. Do it, man.
Okay, thank you.
Paul can throw 450 standstill. All right, 450
Paul.
Plus.
Fair enough.
I think you could do it.
Okay. Well, I think you can do it.
Yeah, I think you could.
Huh? I think you can do it.
Yeah. I think a run-up is a comfort thing a lot more than
could he do it? Are you saying, like, if he has 50 throws, he could do it? Or are you saying, like, if we gave him a disc and we're like, hey, man, you're warmed up, throw the standstill?
Let's say he warms up and he has 5 tries.
And if one of them goes over 450, are you saying you're counting that?
Yeah. Well, we'll be generous. It's not like if he throws one 451 and the other 410, that's not going to count. But if it's like 430, 430, 470, 460.
I would count that. Yeah.
Well, we'd be generous with it. I also don't know what's on the line. If there's a lot of money on the line, I'm being more strict. If there's just a blizzard,
It has to be a blizzard.
Then
I think a run up
is more for timing than it is for actual power generation. So if players can get their run,
I would disagree.
More for timing than power generation.
I would disagree.
You think a run up is more for power generation than timing?
Yes. What? It's way easier to time something if you have less moving parts.
Because the X step and everything gets your like rhythm going to pull back. You practice more run ups. People's timing's more comfortable. How many standstills do you throw when you're out doing field work?
Well, if I could throw the standstill just as far, I would throw standstill, but I can't. That's
why
it's
harder because
the
rhythm and timing isn't there when you're standing still. It's harder to get going. I promise.
No. Okay. Did we just fall at? We're about to end this podcast. Did we just fall into a huge debate?
No, run up will give you like go from 400 to maybe
500.
Sure.
Yeah, that's an insane amount of extra power.
100 feet. You got your first 400 standstill.
You just threw 25% increase in power.
Yeah, but I think that's more because of your timing than it is because it gave you power with momentum.
Oh, no.
How fast do you run up?
Oh, no.
How fast do you run up?
What?
How fast do you think your body's moving and your physical body's moving when you run up? What is your speed?
But
Not the speed, the disc. Yeah, miles an hour that your body's running up when you're running up.
I have no idea.
It can't be more than, what,
we'll
two, five?
Speed gun it.
Six?
Something like that, yeah.
I just feel like...
So how is that?
Like if you look... Okay, so look at... like if you look at like a baseball pitcher, mm-hmm. right?
Why don't they run up?
Well, okay, hold on. I don't think they're allowed to. But the second thing is...
If they ran up, could they throw it faster?
Hold on. Yes. Yeah, what the heck? Yes!
So then do people in the outfield throw faster than pitchers?
Yes!
Do they?
When they crow hop?
I don't know.
When they crow hop? If you can crow hop into and throw a baseball, you can throw way harder. What?
I was legitimately asking a question. Like, is someone crow hopping throwing 110?
Am I just falling asleep right now?
No, I'm asking a legit question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Like, is someone
crow hopping? If you crow hop, you can definitely throw way harder.
I know you can throw farther, but like, how much faster?
Oh, probably like 10 or 15 miles per hour.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying is the ratio of how much farther you're throwing versus standstill, like ratio of power to timing. What is the factor?
I don't know if I'm like,
clock this.
I don't know if I'm being, am I being pranked? Right? Is this a prank? Are you guys pranking me right now?
I'm just saying if you can throw, if Paul can throw 450 standstill and he can throw 550.
I don't think he can throw 450 standstill.
Well, let's just say he can. If he can, and then he can throw 550 run up, then my point's proven. The run up didn't, because in your case, he should be able to throw.
No, but you do you understand?
300,
no, do you under?
Right?
No, I'm not saying it doubles
your
power.
But then
I never say it doubles your power.
But in order for it to give you more power than timing, wouldn't it have to do like where's the point where you're proven right and I'm proven wrong? Is what I want to know. Like
when we look up data points,
what is
Paul's going to say he can throw farther than 450, which I think he could. Like if he was on a course, he would not feel comfortable trying to throw a shot 450 feet. If we're in an open field and it's the same thing. People aren't comfortable trying to throw 600 foot drives. Like most of these guys that you're like, oh my God, they throw so far. They're barely throwing over 500 feet when they're on the course because they're throwing shots that they can control. When you're throwing 600 foot shots, it requires a really uncontrollable shot shape.
Yeah. Run ups give you more control too. Because you have better timing and more power from the run up. You have both.
Do you think
it's easier to throw 400 feet run up? So therefore you have more control over that 400 foot shot than you do stand still.
Do you think you could hit a golf ball harder? Just MPHs off the club face. Do you think you could hit it harder if you hit it in the sweet spot? Like if you hit it well,
absolutely.
Stand still or running up?
Running up.
Okay.
But you can throw and hit harder and faster. I'm saying the ratio.
Also, your control argument. Why do people for like really like 300 foot, 250 foot like tunnel shots? Why do they go stand still?
That's a comfort thing.
That's why I was confused.
I personally run up almost every time. A lot of people will.
Yeah, me too.
Paul runs up 200-foot putter shot. He runs up a lot. If he's in a wide open, he'll do standstill. Mm. It's a comfort thing. Where are you more comfortable? Trevor runs up pretty much every single time unless he can't.
I think we need, if you're listening to this, you might have to go over onto the YouTube channel and vote.
I'm confident enough betting Paul can go 450. I'm just bringing up a legitimate question of like, what is the ratio? Like, I want to test this.
Yeah, I would. No, it's a great question. And I want to see what people think too. So I think we need to have
the whole thing that started is I think people would be surprised at how far pros could throw, like how little a run up actually adds to their throw, if that makes sense.
Oh, I think it adds a lot.
But I think people would be surprised.
Listen to what I'm saying. The better question
is, it does add a lot, but I think people would be surprised how little a lot is, if that makes sense. Like, I think people would be surprised how far pros are throwing.
If someone throws 500, because again, you have to go, like, you have to go percentages. If someone throws 500 feet,
yeah.
What run up? Mm-hmm. What do you propose that person throw standstill?
Well, the farther they throw run, the shorter they throw run up, then it's drastically shorter standstill, drastically, because their form and technique. Okay,
Calvin throws 500 feet.
Calvin Heimberg.
Yes,
I would bet he could push 400. Stands
okay, that's 100 feet. That's 25%. That's 20%.
Yeah, I think people would be.
Wait, is that 20%?
What I'm saying. What I'm saying. Increase? Listen it from this perspective. Listen it from this perspective. Most people listening probably can't throw internet distance. They can probably throw 425. Real distance, they can probably throw 375.
Wow, shot fired at all our listeners.
I'm saying the majority of disc golfers, 375 is a good pump, me included. So to hear a pro can do eat more than that standstill is very shocking, because it's like,
is it?
Yes. If you were ripping a drive,
I mean,
as hard,
a pro for a reason.
I mean,
but throwing, well,
but it, yeah, because like in golf, like how far do you hit your driver?
I'm just saying,
like 200 yards. Like,
I'm telling you, I have seen it at clinics.
Pros can hit.
I have done many clinics. I've done clinics at Worlds. Right.
Kyle's offended. Listen, I apologize for Hunter.
I said majority. So if you can throw farther than that, you're not in the majority. There you go. I have done clinics at Worlds. Okay. Where there's been fans there and there have been pros there.
Was that a flex? Was that a flex size?
I think it was.
Okay.
No, I'm just trying to explain this to you. Right. Where the fans there are watching pros.
Yeah.
They've never seen pros throw full power standstill, because no one has, because pros don't do it. And then the pros in the clinic will be explaining how little run up actually does when you're starting off. You need to focus on the standstill, and they'll rip off a 400 plus foot standstill. And the AMs are like, or the people there watching, or their mind is absolutely blown, because it's like, that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand how you're throwing 100 feet farther than me without running up. I thought a run up was way more important.
Okay, time out. If you have terrible form, a run up does nothing for you. I would agree with you, because I would do something very similar in my clinics teaching a forehand. Is I would literally go, I wouldn't even go stand, I would go even more than
stance. That's what I was saying. People would be shocked how far pros are still throwing stance.
Because I would throw,
that was my stance.
For Frisbee, 40 yards is pretty far for a forehand. I would literally just go like this,
mm-hmm.
just wrist and a little elbow, and be able to throw a forehand 40 yards, which is like as far as some people would be when they take these huge windups and stuff. But you're talking about bad form.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
I'm saying bad form is out.
No, I wasn't. I was saying people would be shocked to see how far pros are throwing standstill and how little their run-up is adding. Because in people's heads, I would imagine they're thinking pros are throwing 300 feet run-up and throwing 300 feet standstill and throwing 600 feet run-up.
I don't think pros are saying that.
I don't think pros are.
No, sorry. I don't think amateurs are thinking that.
Well, then, because my question would be like, if I'm an amateur watching and I see a pro throw from 400 feet out and he can throw standstill, why wouldn't he? So I would think that he can't.
Because
you never see it. Because a run-up gives you more control, because it gives you more power. I'm just saying.
No, it gives you more control because you don't have to throw as hard.
Because it gives you more power. That's why you don't have to throw as hard. We're saying the same thing.
What?
A run-up gives you more power, so you don't have to throw as hard. So therefore, you can throw 400
feet. I thought you were saying
control.
A run-up doesn't give you power. I thought that was your old argument.
No, I said the ratio of power from a run-up to standstill would be shocking to people.
All right, let's myth buster this. We're going to myth bust
this. My original point was, I think people would be People would be
Paul Macbeth. Yes. 450.
My original point that has not shifted is people would be shocked at how far pros can throw standstill and yes. how little a run-up adds to their standstill.
How far is everyone... Okay, how far are people listening right now in the chat?
Well, now they've heard me say I've seen pros well, throw no, no, 400 let's
just,
plus feet.
How so, far like, do you guys think Paul is going to throw standstill? Just to get a gauge.
That's fine.
Just get a gauge. How far do you think Paul is going to throw standstill?
But do you get what I'm saying? That I think people would be shocked that like pros are able to throw within 100 to 150 feet of what they're doing run-up wise because AMs aren't.
Maybe.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe.
I'm saying 400, 450.
Someone said 475.
475.
That would be impressive. Yeah, I mean.
Probably 400 is the average.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I just don't think it's something that if you are good at disc golf or kind of know what you're doing with disc golf, like if you're brand new, sure. But if you like have been playing a while, I don't think you're going to be insanely shocked that some people can throw decently far a standstill.
I mean, I've seen people who have played for years and years watch a clinic and go, holy frick, you can throw that far standstill.
Yeah, but there's also people that I've played like with people that like throw like a stock 450 foot shot and people are still freaked out. I think it's just the people are freaked out of watching people that they love throw this.
My original statement that I will forever stand by is I think people would be shocked to see how far pros could throw standstill in relation to how far they're throwing run-ups.
Yes. We're going to see. We're going to test this out.
I agree.
We're going to test
agree.
This out.
I think that would shock people.
We're going to test this out.
That's all
I'm
saying.
We're going to test this out. We're going to have... I
don't get how that is such a,
I think the best,
outlandish statement to make.
I think this is the best thing to do. I think this is the best thing to do. Five shots, okay? And again, these are disc golf shots, okay? So it's not, hey, throw this as far as you can. It's...
First off, the chat is coming at me like, Hunter, we get it. I understand you get it.
I don't
I'm
get
explaining
it.
This to this guy right here who doesn't get
but
it
I think,
still.
I think
I understand. You're all with me.
No,
we're
they're
all
not.
Tracking.
No one is with you.
They're all tracking with what I'm saying.
No, none of them are.
They might not agree with what
so
I'm saying. They understand
shots.
What I'm saying. You have no idea because if you understood what I was saying, you would agree with what I'm saying.
You got
what I'm
five
saying.
Shots for standstill, five shots for run-up, okay? And you're throwing like you're throwing on a disc golf course, not max distance, okay? Then you take away, I think you go outliers. You take away the worst throw and you take away the best throw.
I need you to look at what's going on in the chat. There's a mutiny against you in the chat.
No,
right now.
No one's mutinying against me.
Look at that.
So then you're left with three throws each and you take the average and then we see where we're at.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay?
That's fine.
All right, everyone fine? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You might not need to read. You shouldn't read the chat.
I don't.
It's a tough scene for you in the chat.
I'm not worried about this.
That's a tough scene. I'm sorry, Brady.
I think you're just
saying stuff.
You know
what? I'm sorry you have to go through that.
You're saying this for people that are listening that can't see the chat right now. The chat is heavily in favor of me when you're saying do outfielders throw faster than pitchers?
That was a legitimate question. That was a legitimate question.
That just shows that you're insane.
That's a question I have.
That shows that you're insane.
No. Because my question wasn't if you don't put a pitcher in the outfield, I understand he could throw faster. I'm saying a person in the outfield.
I don't even think a pitcher in the outfield could throw faster.
I'm saying a person.
It's different mechanics.
Are we saying faster?
I'm saying I'm saying a person in the outfield. Are they throwing faster than a pitcher? That's
yes,
my. That's
because
my
they're
legitimate
running
question.
Up and they're crow hopping and. Launching their body
that can
into
surely
the
be
ball.
Googled. That can surely be Googled.
Google it.
But, oh my gosh. See, everyone now,
think, Brody?
The tide has turned. The
no,
tide
because
has
you're
turned.
Bringing up a point that I didn't even make.
The tide has turned.
You're bringing up a point I asked.
No. I know, but by you asking that question shows
that,
me.
I've never played baseball, so I'm just asking that question because I'm just... Okay, an MLB outfielder can throw 105 miles an hour.
Yeah, there's very
few pitchers.
A pitcher is
throwing 95 plus.
Yeah, that's 10 miles per hour faster.
That's 10%. That's only 10%. That goes right back to
faster.
My point. That's.
But it's fast.
I never said it wouldn't be faster.
The point is.
I said people would
no,
be
no,
shocked
stop.
How little
no,
run-up added.
Stop.
10%. Thank you so much for tuning
no,
in.
No. Last
can't
thing.
Can't wait to talk to you
no,
all next week.
Last
same
thing.
Time, same
last
place.
Last thing.
We'll see you
10% faster. Hold on. Do not cut. Do a Caesar me. 10% faster from a runner running a mile at 10 miles per hour, 10% faster is not that big of a deal. 10% faster of someone that's running a sub 4-minute mile, that is insane. That's all I'm going to leave you at. You're talking about someone that's pitching
what?
95 miles per hour.
I'm asking Nobody, this question. I'm asking this question.
No one can pitch.
Can I ask you this question?
Yes.
What is 10% farther of 600 feet?
660 feet.
I rest my case.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit highfivecasino.com. That's high, the number five, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.